At 7:30, Per Fagerin, guest host on Locus Focus Talk Radio. His guest is Jack Huberman, author of 101 People Who Are Really Screwing America. And at 9, it's Movie Talk with Ed, DK, and Don, reviewing the latest movies. At 9:30 on Speaking of Animals, Lori's guest is Andrea Onken, medical director of the Dove Lewis Emergency Animal Hospital. At 10, we'll hear KBOO Radio segment from the Pacifica Radio Network special election series called Informed Dissent. At 11, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. And at 12 noon on Alternative Radio, George Lakoff speaks on Framing the Debate. Thanks for joining us.
This is the community calendar for Wednesday, October 25th. Northwest Veg presents What's Behind the Label? Searching for Integrity in Food Marketing. Is all the sustainable, organic, earth, and animal-friendly food in the grocery store really what it claims to be? Or are we being duped by the agribusiness as usual? Join them for presentations and question and answer panel discussion on food certification. This event will be held tonight, 7 o'clock p.m. at the First Congregational Church. That address is 1124 Southwest Park Avenue in downtown Portland. Panelists include representatives from the Oregon Tilth Certified Organic, the Food Alliance, and Salmon Safe. Northwest Veg educates and empowers people to make vegetarian choices for a healthy, sustainable, and compassionate world. This is a free event, although donations are encouraged to help cover the cost of the venue rental. For more information, call 503-297-8435, 503-297-8435, or visit the web at nwveg.org. The Holiday Bike Drive 2006 is the Community Cycling Center's largest event of the year. They distribute refurbished bikes and new helmets to deserving children for the holidays. This year we'll give 600 kids refurbished bikes and new helmets. The CCC partners with schools and family service organizations in the Portland and Vancouver areas to identify children with the greatest need. The Community Cycling Center was founded in 1994 to build skills and foster the personal growth of youth through community-oriented recreational and educational bicycle programs and services. Sustainability, self-sufficiency, recycling, reusing, and safety are all trademarks of the programs and are central to the CCC's mission. The Community Cycling Center also operates a full-service retail bike shop that is open to the public and sells refurbished bicycles. Bicycles and parts are donated from individuals, institutions, and supporting businesses. Volunteers, bicycle donations, and financial contributions have made the Community Cycling Center the largest bicycle recycling organization in the United States. Contact the CCC for information about bike donations or volunteering. Call Allison Hill at 503-546-8864. That's 503-546-8864. Or visit the web at communitycyclingcenter.org. And this has been the Community Calendar for Wednesday, October 25th. I'm Alicia Olson for KBOO, listener-sponsored community radio in Portland, Hood River, and Corvallis.
Dang, man, that was a long week. So what you doing this weekend?
Oh, man, I don't know. I'm just going to hang out with my girl, you know, chill.
Nah, man, don't hang out with the girl. I'm going to take you somewhere.
Well, where are you going to take me?
Hold up. I'll tell you right now.
All right.
Deck out in your funkiest Halloween costume for the KBOO Boo Bash. This fundraiser will be broadcast live and features a wide range of Portland's best underground musical talent, including Fleshstone, D&D, Evolutionary Jazz Band, DJ P-Disco, and much more. The party takes place at Holocene, located at 1001 Southeast Morrison, on Halloween night, Tuesday, October 31st, from 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. For more information, please check out KBOO on the web at kboo.fm.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fogring, KBOO News and Public Affairs, and today we will be interviewing, talking with an author named Jack Huberman, who wrote a book called 101 People Who Are Really Screwing America. So this should be a kind of a lively show. It's an interesting book, but we're not going to get to him. What we're doing is we're having our first pitch break right around now. That way we get it out of the way, and then around 7:45 we will be talking to the author, and then that way the program will only be interrupted twice for pledge break. So this allows more time to talk with the author and to take your calls. So anyway, I think right now we are going to be talking to the are the folks in Membership Central out there? Maybe not. Anyway, this book. Why don't we go to Membership Central if there's anybody there? Okay, in 1 minute. Okay, well, let me tell you a little bit about this book. 101 People Who Are Really Screwing America, and you know, you can imagine who they are. You know, the usual suspects. You've heard their names mentioned on this station many, many times. So there's not a whole lot. Well, there's no suspense about, say, the top four, you know, but there's a lot of interesting people further down on the list. So anyway, right now, I think we have, is Chris there?
Yes.
Hey,
hi, Pat. Good
how
morning.
How are you doing? Good morning.
Great. Thank you so much for inviting me to talk to the listener out there who I can tell wants this book, 101 People Who Are Really Screwing America. That's for just a $60 minimum pledge, $5 out of your checking account every month. You lose more than that in spare change, you know, down underneath the front seat of your vehicle or behind the sofa or something. It just trickles away where it actually could be, money could actually be put to work doing something
That's my nest egg.
Something positive, something useful, something activist, something thoughtful. You're a smart person, the person, you know, the listener out there. I picture the listener as, you know, a smart person, somebody who's very active, very aware, very involved in their community. And that's kind of like a profile of a KBOO member, the person that calls us at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. You are the person that makes a difference. You are the person that does not follow the herd. You don't allow yourself to be terrorized, and you don't allow yourself to be cowering in your house, just talking to people that you already know, you know, that kind of thing. You're out there all the time in the community working for positive change. You're the person that calls 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Martha and I are still here, and we're still talking to you because we know that you are the person that makes the difference. You are the person who does not follow the rest of the herd.
11 sets a day. That's just astounding. Stick it in your piggy bank. All those pennies you carry around, light your load, stick them in your piggy bank so the next time membership drive comes up, take it down to the coin machine and turn it into a phenomenal amount of money.
Or you can take your money also here down to the station and turn it into activism on the air. We are magic down here. We can take your money, turn it into activism that goes out to the rest of the world, to whoever is listening. Are you listening? If you're a listener, you need to make that call, 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. You got a choice. You can follow the rest of the herd. You can listen to what they want you to listen to. You can believe what they want you to believe. Or you can be have a questioning, curious mind. KABU is for curious people, people who want to know a little bit more of the story. And members of KABU are the ones who call us at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. That last number, that 1-877 number, that's a toll-free number, and that's especially out there for those of you who live outside of the 503 area code. Toll-free number, you can call us, reach us at 1-877-500-5266. Martha, why, you know, why would somebody who lives out, you know, what would be the appeal of KABU out there in the
in the other places? Well, you know, while I was traveling, I could hook it up any place on the net and check in with KBOO at www.kboo.fm. So you can take it with you.
We're not paid to do this, so we're not beholden to anybody. No one pays Martha and I to be, and nobody pays Per Fager, any of the other wonderful people that you listen to during the morning, during our news and public affairs sections of the programming. The rest of the program is music, all sorts of stuff. There's radio theater. There's something on the air any time that you choose to put the radio on. And we are here as volunteers. We are not being paid. We don't have to watch our step and tiptoe around issues. We don't have companies like Archer Daniels Midland giving us money so that we will carefully avoid putting any stories about genetically engineered crops, say, for example, corn and so forth, flooding into third world countries. No one pays us. We're not beholden to anybody. So what we can afford to be truthful. That's what we can afford to do. That's what your membership makes possible. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Martha.
KABU is truly phenomenal. I don't know how many people have been involved in volunteer organizations, but it's hard to get stuff done with volunteers, and it is astounding. The equipment, the music library, the fact that programs happen all the time, that, well,
it's really amazing.
It is astounding, and it's a class act. You know, there's glitches here and there, and sometimes we're scrambling around trying to fill in slots. Sometimes it's 30 seconds before we start the news till all the copy is ready.
That never happens.
Today. We had maybe a whole minute and a half, but come down and visit KABU if you've never been here. It is an astounding place that it's done with members' money, with volunteer efforts, and very little paid
and
stuff.
And lots of adrenaline.
And how long? What? 37, 38 years.
It's like a high wire act. It really is. I mean, the fact that it gets on the air at all is just. You know, what is that story about, like, the dog that plays the violin? It's not that he plays it badly, it's that he plays it at all. Per?
Yes.
I love that dog playing the violin thing.
Yeah.
503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Right now is the time for you to call to be a participant in this extraordinary balancing act, this real high wire act. Per.
Yes, here I am. Okay.
Yay.
Well, our guest is Jack Huberman. Are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, welcome to KABU.
Thank you.
Well, let me introduce you. You are you live in New York City, and but you're not from New York originally, are you?
No, I'm Canadian.
Oh, okay.
I'm a dual citizen. Grew up in Montreal.
Oh, Montreal. That's one of my favorite cities. Too bad the hockey team is not doing so well.
Oh, they're not that bad.
Well, somebody told me it's because of the dollar exchange that they can't play their pay their players as much as they should. But anyway,
but interestingly, the Canadian dollar has been gaining strength, and so mm-hmm. have the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, that is good. That is really good. You know, I'm old enough to remember Rocket Richard.
Who probably, so am I.
Probably nobody listening, very few people listening even know who he was. But he was,
I have an autographed picture of him on my wall.
Oh, my gosh, really? Oh,
absolutely.
Great. Well, I got a hockey stick autographed by his younger brother, Henri.
Oh, he's one of my favorites, too, number 16.
Anyway, I think we're just kind of mystifying all our listeners. So let me introduce you again. Jack Huberman is the author of the Bush Haters Handbook and its sequel called Bush It. And now he has written a book called 101 People Who Are Really Screwing America. And I just, you know, I've been reading this book. It's really fascinating. You've got a lot of nasty people crowded into 330 pages.
Yeah, 100 slots wasn't nearly enough.
How did you do that? How did you boil it all down?
Well, you know, the funny thing was, when I got the idea, I think I basically had the list within about 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was a question of the last few slots, which I agonized over endlessly, you know, about which of several hundred people should get the last few slots.
So many deserving people, yeah.
So, you know, the fact that I had the basic list so quickly does kind of jibe with the fact that there are a lot of usual suspects in here, especially in the top 10, the inner Bush circle, basically. But the point was, as I think you may know, if the title of the book sounds familiar, it's because it was a response to a book that had come out last year by a conservative, Bernard Goldberg, that listeners may be familiar with. Best known for writing a book called Bias, in which he explained yet again how the media are dominated by liberal bias, as we all know. He had written this book last year called 100 People Who Are Screwing Up America, and Al Franken is number 37.
Mm.
That was all part of the title.
Mm-hmm.
Very successful book. An outrageous book. It just... not one member of the Bush administration, nobody responsible for Iraq, nobody responsible for all the lies and disinformation, nobody responsible for the pre-9/11 so-called intelligence failures or for trying to block the investigations into that, nobody responsible for illegal spying on Americans, for subverting the Constitution by ignoring Congress and turning the presidency into a monarchy, I could go on and on and on. No corporate wrongdoers except the ones that had already been busted, like Ken Lay, which, you know, if I were Bernard Goldberg, I'd throw in a couple of those guys, too, to give my book a semblance of some kind of balance. But meanwhile, no tobacco industry, no drug industry, you know, the ones, no polluters, none of the major polluters, just a couple of busted ones, you know, because mm-hmm. after all, as we all know, it's just a few, you know, rotten apples.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
So, you know, the book needed a response.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was going to call it 101 People Who Are Really Screwing America, there was no way I couldn't put in those usual suspects I was referring to. You know, you want to be more sort of surprising, but at the same time, it had to be, I think, I'd like to say, to think mine is funnier. It reads funnier, but mm-hmm. it's really a more serious book because there's no way you can take Goldberg's book seriously.
Well, you know, there's a lot of information in here. It's really good for that. And, you know, maybe we should just start with the big four, you know, who are sort of digging America into a hole. And number four should be, number one is Dick Cheney. And number two is George Bush, number three is Karl Rove, and number four is Donald Rumsfeld. I mean, that's sort of like a gang of four right there. I mean,
yep.
You want to start with Dick Cheney?
You know, good. I'm actually glad to say that I didn't have Ashcroft to deal with anymore. Sure, we can start with Dick Cheney. He's number one. Well, I've been quoting this a lot, but I thought it was so apt. I think John Dean said, the way he put it was, Bush is head of state, Cheney is head of government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as in the countries where the head of state is largely ceremonial. Cheney's like the prime minister.
Right. Bush is sort of like the king or
something. I think that's very apt.
Mm-hmm.
Bush, especially in the first few years, was pretty helpless. I mean, all those cartoons of, you know, Cheney as a ventriloquist with Bush on his lap, you know, the cartoonists often get it right. They got that right. And, you know, Bush didn't come into office. He came in with no interest in foreign policy and even less knowledge of foreign policy. I don't know what he had knowledge of outside of Texas and baseball. But Cheney came in with decades of ideology already in his head. And pretty much everything we've seen in terms of foreign policy and the expansion of presidential power, that's Cheney's philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
If you can call it a philosophy.
Right. You know, it's I just heard him. He was on the morning news today. He was interviewed on NPR, you know, and he was kind of rambling and rumbling on about Iraq and everything, trying to say he's not, you know, that we're still staying the course and all that. But, you know, the thing that really gets me about him is that here's a guy who talks so macho, but during the Vietnam War, he had five draft deferments. You know, he had five chances to, and he believed in the war too. You know, if he'd been a protester, you know, I'd say okay, but he believed in that war, but he bugged out of it five times. And I think he was quoted as saying, well, he had better things to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that really frosts me, you know, that here's this guy talks so tough, but he doesn't even think of laying his own life on the line.
Whereas they think nothing of laying 3,000 lives on the line or into their graves for what?
Mm-hmm. Well,
I don't think people get it yet. You know, that's what's frustrating. As unpopular as this war is, I'm concerned that a lot of people who have turned against it just think it was badly managed, or they don't know why we went in. The next step is to know why they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't just one simple answer. I mean, you probably, everybody you ask who does think they know will have a different one, but for each of the players involved, it was something different. But for Bush, and really, I think you, more precisely for Rove, it was a political weapon to help in the 2002 elections, to take back Congress, and to put the Democrats on the spot, to make the Republicans look strong, the Democrats look weak and wussy, and to make Bush into the great war leader.
Well,
and then there's all the other agendas around, like the neocons and the oil and this, that, and the other.
Well, so it's like some of these neocons have these sort of imperial dreams, and you're saying that other people, you know, they're sort of more interested in staying in power at home, and they'll sacrifice anybody to do that.
Well, as long as they were all on the same page about doing it, you know, nobody had a problem. But as I think Paul Wolfowitz, former deputy defense secretary, now president of the World Bank, how did he say that weapons of mass destruction was the reason we could all agree on? I mean, in other words, it was the story they could go out, you know, to the public with. Essentially, we were never told about what their actual agendas were. But, you know, for Cheney, to go back to Cheney, well, I'm sorry, I'm not telling you anything original here, I don't think, but I think, you know, not just for Cheney, but this whole administration represents the revenge. It's the extension, it's a quantum leap forward of the Reagan agenda. And it represents the revenge of the rich white men who for decades had watched their position of privilege at the top of society being eroded and women and minorities coming in, and had sat there stewing about it. and at the same time had couldn't stand the idea that people might occasionally think that America had done something wrong. We had to, you know, I'm talking about after Vietnam. We had to get over the Vietnam syndrome.
Well, that's been kind of a recurring theme. I think George Bush the Elder said something about that. You know, the idea that I guess they just can't live with the fact that America is not really as all-powerful as it claims to be.
Right. I mean, these guys, Cheney is the foremost example, and Rumsfeld. Cheney and Rumsfeld, really, were just disgusted that Americans might occasionally feel guilty about something. We must not feel guilty, and we must not feel reluctant to throw our weight around. After all, what are we the richest and most powerful country in the world for, if not to have fun with it? Something
right.
Like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, now talk about Rumsfeld. You know, Rumsfeld is actually the only person, you know, among all the Washington warlords who actually did serve in the military. I think he was a Navy pilot. I don't think he ever saw combat. And you bring up one interesting fact that he had his staff study ancient empires to kind of see how they stayed dominant or something. Now, that can you go into that a little bit?
Yeah. My hard drive, so to speak, is trying to pull that back up.
Mm-hmm.
I've written a whole other book since this one.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to remember. I do remember that. I'm just trying to remember when it was, but I think it was
summer 2001.
Yeah.
And he studied Alexander the Great's empire, the Romans, and the Mongols to determine how they had maintained their dominance.
Right. Well, there you are. I mean, you know, this agenda was just sitting there waiting for an excuse. And, you know, Rumsfeld is the one who 5 hours after the attacks on September 11th said, let's go to Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Better targets there or something.
Not Afghanistan, because, as he said, there aren't enough good targets in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
So it was as though, I mean, other people have said, you know, why not Mexico? Why not Japan?
Why not Canada?
Canada. But, you know, for me, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, it's as though the police are, you know, have their guns drawn on an armed suspect, but they don't have a good shot at him. So they shoot a bystander because they have a better shot at the bystander.
Mm, mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, for all that Iraq had to do with September 11th. So, and Rumsfeld, of course, comes out of the Project for the New Century, as did pretty much every important person in the Bush foreign policy apparatus. Cheney, Lewis Libby, Richard Perle, Wolfowitz. Which was, a group formed in the 1980s to push forward this thing that has become the Bush Doctrine that I was discussing before about America becoming getting over its post-Vietnam reticence and starting to get aggressive again, develop nuclear mm-hmm. weapons, mm-hmm. missile defense. Rumsfeld has been obsessed with missile defense. He's the one who. When the Congress wanted to shift $600 million from missile defense to counterterrorism, Rumsfeld said he would ask Bush to veto it. That was September 9th, 2001.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy. Uh-huh. Well, he seems to have this kind of a love of space technology. You know, I mean, the U.S. wants to monopolize space, allow
yes.
nobody supposedly hostile to enter space. I mean, this
yep.
is, you know, you sort of get a picture of these satellites that just sort of circle the Earth and pinpoint targets and strike from above or something like that.
I think they're like boys, you know, are mm-hmm. wowed with their new video game. I mean, I get an image of adolescence and, you know, this is his toy. And nobody's going to take away his toy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, again, this has been a pretty familiar observation, you know, that a lot of people have made, but their problem, this administration's well-known neglect of terrorism before 9/11 and in fact after 9/11 comes from the fact that that's really defense. And missile defense, although it's defense, sounds like it has the word defense in it, isn't really. What it really is and in its conception, it was a way for us to be able to threaten other countries with our nuclear arsenal without having to worry so much about retaliation.
Mm-hmm.
So for these guys, you know, defense is just too wimpy and too you know, girly man. I don't know what term to use. You know, these are offense players.
Defeatocrats. Is that the term they're using now? The defeatocrats.
Defeatocrats.
The defeatocrats. Yeah.
I hadn't heard that one.
Oh yeah, that's been mentioned a lot, you know, on the campaign. You know, it's interesting about these ancient empires because I don't think Alexander's empire really lasted that long.
No.
You know, it didn't really survive him by, you know, he died rather young, and his empire ran into a defeat in Persia, I believe, or certainly in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of evaporated. I think it split up. Three of his generals kind of took over, and they had their own little empires. And
that was kind of the end of it.
It
split up right upon his death into three parts.
So how long?
From the Middle Eastern point of view and the Arab and Muslim point of view, they have long memories, and to them, the Iraq War is a story that goes all the way back to Alexander, the story of Western imperial ambitions in the East. So it's kind of interesting for Rumsfeld to come along and sort of lend some substance to that.
Well, and then you get the Roman Empire, which also seemed to kind of reach its limits in Persia. You know, we think a lot about the barbarians from Northern Europe overrunning Rome, but it wasn't quite the case. They were sort of allies of Rome for a while. They were mercenary soldiers, but they really ran the empire ran aground again in the Middle East.
Yeah, but they were smart enough to give up on that dream of pushing further east than pretty much the Jordan River, as I recall.
Mm.
I may be wrong about that. But I just hope that none of these people start studying the Roman Empire, and because it did last arguably about 1,000 years.
Well,
not as an empire, but including the Republic period. So, you know, these would-be emperors usually think in terms of a 1,000-year Reich.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Roman Empire, I guess the Byzantine part of it lasted quite a while, but the Roman Empire itself lasted about, maybe
400 years.
And so if you think of the United States Empire beginning in 1500, more or less, then, we've been around for about 500 years. So it's not that the Roman Empire should be any great example. Of course, I'm convinced that they were really not that civilized anyway. You know, you think of 3,000 slaves crucified along the Appian Way just to show the slaves a lesson, you see. I mean, that is not civilization to me. But anyway, I think we might be having, if people do want to call in, the number is 231-8187. So, that is a number to call.
And we're here discussing the Byzantine Empire.
Well, that's just a sidelight.
Yeah, I love the digressions.
But we do have any callers, you know, we can talk to them. But we're talking about 101 people who are really screwing America, which is the title of your book, and the Byzantine Empire is kind of a little digression, I suppose.
Yeah.
But
it's also misleading, really, to talk about those empires, except in the fevered imaginations of people like Rumsfeld, because it's not an American empire so much, a national empire. Bush goes around, you know, to this day, when he talks about bringing democracy, which is, you know, it's an obscenity for him to be talking about spreading democracy around the world, when he's been doing so much to undercut democracy right here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But he's constantly, when he talks about the war on terrorism, he usually manages to talk about free trade,
mm-hmm.
which is really interesting. He hammers away at this message that free trade, is going to bring prosperity to all those countries, and, poverty is the root of terrorism and underdevelopment. Free trade is the answer. It's really a corporate empire that they are. It's really corporate domination, corporate rule of the world,
mm-hmm.
that is the dream here, more than any kind of traditional national empire.
Well, when they talk about, democracy, I mean, even on, NPR stuff, they talk about democracy as sort of a lot of times it's free market democracy, like they're one and the same thing. Without free markets, you don't have democracy.
Mm-hmm.
You
can certainly have free markets without democracy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think
every Latin American dictatorship that we've ever supported,
mm-hmm.
for instance.
Mm-hmm. Well, if the number to call for listeners, besides our pledge drive number, the number to call is 231-8187. But I don't think we have anybody right in the line now. But I think maybe we should go to Membership Central and do a little membership break, and then we'll get back to our author in a little bit. So why don't we do that? Hello, is anybody there?
Somebody's here.
Oh, well, how are you?
Oh, we're good. It's a little bit quiet in here.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to stay awake when there's not exciting stuff going on. You mentioned corporate domination. This is KBOO, totally not corporate dominated. We are member dominated, and it's time for you to get in here and start dominating.
Nobody pays us to be here, so we are not obliged to humor any corporations. We are not obliged to sidestep issues. For example, if a company was a donor to KBOO, we'd have to be very careful. And no one's paying me to be here. Anybody paying you, Martha?
Just good karma.
No, the thing that you get out of KBOO, of course, is the programming, and you get to participate in really kind of a dangerous game here, because what we do is keep the airwaves free and brave and strong and unencumbered by corporate interests. That is what we do. That's what we're all about, and we want you to become a member of this family. Call us right now at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Call us right now. This is the most important step, the critical step. Membership means everything to here, and it's your voice, it's your money that keeps the airwaves free for all. I mean, you can call up, talk to Pear. Talk to Paris guests happens all the time, every week. And that is only possible because of you. Because you, as an individual, decided to become a member, to increase your membership, to participate, to invest in this extraordinary experiment that is, we are, sort of the last stand between the media being utterly corporatized and utterly compromised. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
Chris, there's a couple other options too. If you're getting ready to head out the door, going to work or school or whatever's on your agenda, stop by, come visit us. You can have a tour of the KBOO facilities. We've got bagels. We'll be happy to share with you. Or if you're sitting there checking your email, got to do that every day so it doesn't get full, click on www.kboo.fm and choose Join Now. You can do it online. You don't even have to get out of your jammies.
It's a sure thing. You cannot lose. You know exactly where your money's going because you hear it every time you turn on the radio. You know, the old saying, money talks. Well, it certainly does. And you can hear your money talking to you if you call that number, 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. It's a beautiful sound, especially when it's going out to people who we all as a society have limited access to the truth. And you do get it here, and we can say that, you know, unashamedly, because we're not paid. We're not paid to put one point of view or another on the air. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266 outside of the 503 area code. Call right now. Be the individual. You be the person. Be the one that makes a difference.
Okay, and I believe, I think we have, I don't know how many copies of this book, 101 People Who Are Really Screwing America. That book is available for is it a $60 pledge or a $75 pledge? I am not sure. The people, if you call 232-8818, we have people who can tell you what you can get for, what kind of thank you gifts we do have. So now we're back with our author, Jack Huberman.
My pair.
Hey, okay.
You put that Henri Richard hockey stick up as a gift, and I'll make an even bigger pledge.
Oh, really? Oh, gee whiz. I think the stick is cracked. That's why they gave it away. Well, yeah, he was a great player. There's a movie. I'm going to digress a little bit here. There's a movie called Rocket that's, I guess, it's pretty popular in Canada. It's about Rocket Richard, isn't it?
Never heard of it, but
oh, really?
I haven't lived there in 25 years.
Okay. Well, anyway, I think we have some callers waiting to talk to us.
Okay.
But let's see. Our engineer is doing... Anyway, one person I'd like to talk about is Mike. Whoops. Hello? Are we still there? Jack, are you there? Whoops. Well, I guess, I think we lost our author, but we're getting him back online. We do have some callers on the line, too. So as soon as we get everybody connected, we will be up and running again. In the meantime, let me just say once again that this book, 101 People Who Are Really Screwing America, is one of our thank you gifts. And it is available. The number to call is 503-232-8818. Or if you're outside the metro area, 1-877-500-5266. So it's an interesting book. I just finished reading it, and it's a pretty fast read. You can go through. It's a real source book because it's got these 101 people, and it's got all the information about them. It's sort of right there at your fingertips. I think are we back online? Jack, are you there?
I'm back.
Okay, I think we got disconnected for a minute. Yeah,
yes.
There was this movie about Rocket Richard. I heard it was very popular in Canada. It had some, for our listeners, I guess I should tell people who Rocket Richard was. He was a French-Canadian hockey player back in the 50s, and he was just I saw him play when I was a kid, and he was sort of he was the most single-minded hockey player I ever saw. He just, he was really a terror on the ice, and he was just a brilliant skater, and he was a real hero to French Canadians in Montreal and everywhere. And so, they made a movie about him, and, he was sort of like the Babe Ruth of hockey in some ways.
Yeah. I'd just like to tell you just quickly two things about him. He was the first player to score 50 goals in 50 games,
mm-hmm.
and that was when the season was 50 games long. And he's often credited, his story, with starting the separatist movement, the nationalist movement in Quebec, because in one of the playoff series in the 50s, I think it was around 56, maybe 54, he was suspended from the playoffs for some penalty or a fight or something, and there were riots in downtown Montreal.
That's right.
Up and down St. Catherine Street, the main drag. And the feeling was that the president of the league was Anglo, and he had suspended the national hero of Quebec, and it did a tremendous amount to sort of raise nationalistic consciousness, if you will, among Quebecois.
That's true, you know, and actually, you know, if you talk about, you know, the real fighters in hockey, they're not very often the French Canadians. They're often the sort of these big Ukrainian guys from the prairies, or the English-speaking players. You know, the French hockey players, they like to skate, you know.
That's what they like best.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, back to our topic. We have a caller on the line. How are you? Whoops, I guess we don't. Well, let me bring up a name of Michael Ledeen.
Oh yeah.
Now he is number 26 on your list, and you know a lot of people don't know who he is. They really haven't heard of him. I ran that name by some people who are usually pretty well informed, and they don't know anything about him. So tell us about Michael Ledeen.
Okay. I'm just flipping to him to help me out here, but he's with the American Enterprise Institute. He's a leading intellectual of the right. Not exactly a neocon, but I'll explain. He's a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, which is one of the two leading right-wing think tanks, along with the Heritage Foundation. He's also a contributing editor at National Review. He was a consultant to the Pentagon, the State Department, and the White House under Reagan. He was marginally involved in the Iran-Contra affair. I won't go into that. But he's been a real philosophical force behind the neoconservative movement, and he's often quoted by people like Cheney and Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz formerly. But with this guy, he'll say things precisely because he's not in the spotlight, and for other reasons. He'll say things that others in the movement don't dare say publicly if they have any political career at stake.
Right.
And you can really see where these guys are coming from. Like Karl Rove, he's got a fascination with Machiavelli, and he wrote a book called Machiavelli on Modern Leadership, Why Machiavelli's Iron Rules Are as Timely and Important Today as 5 centuries ago. Well, Machiavelli, he was very important in the evolution of modern political thought, but he was writing basically a guidebook. Machiavelli was writing a guidebook for a warlord, you know.
That's right. for
Cesare Borgia. Mm-hmm. So if that's applicable, well, you know, I'm sure your listeners know Machiavelli stands for completely amoral, cold, ruthless, hardball politics.
No matter
who gets hurt.
Right. You know, well, there's one quote from Ledeen here that got it in your book. This is Ledeen speaking. Every 10 years or so, the United States needs to pick up some small, crappy little country and throw it against the wall just to show the world we mean business.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of it right there, you know.
That's a paraphrase. I'm actually quoting Jonah Goldberg, the conservative columnist, who was paraphrasing Ledeen. I think we can trust Goldberg on that because Goldberg was an admirer, is an admirer of Ledeen. He was quoting this approvingly. And I think that statement also says a great deal about what we're doing in Iraq.
That's right.
It's just the idea that I guess it's
boss.
Self-explanatory, but it's just the idea that we've got to use our military strength, our military force, or people will stop believing that we're willing to use it.
Right. I think we got a caller on the line. Let's take that call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hello?
Hello. You're on the air.
the president is giving a press conference right now.
He is.
Yes. And it's just nauseating to listen to this man. I mean, his usual form, belligerence, little of substance, contradictions, falsehoods. It's just nauseating. And yeah, I know, you know, he's not the one in charge. You know, he doesn't have the mental capacity to perform the duties of his office. I know it's other people, and he's just up there to as a show. But after he gives his little performance this morning, the press is going to sort of translate. And what part of the worst, you know, the most dangerous 100 people, what part is the media playing to, they have this role in the world, because American people are being told, getting their information instead from Bush, who's an idiot, you know, and a liar. What is the media doing, in your opinion?
Well, there's no question that Bush would not have been possible. A Bush presidency would not have been possible without the media being what it is in America. And as it turned out, you know, I knocked Bernard Goldberg for, in his book, he took the with his notion of that the media are still dominated by liberals. He was a former CBS reporter. I'm sorry, this is a roundabout answer, but he was a former CBS reporter for 25 years, and he left. I don't know what, there was some personal stuff, and he left with a lot of rancor towards CBS and Dan Rather. And the incident where CBS ran a story about Bush avoiding his National Guard duty, and it turned out that the document they had used was bogus. Well, I don't, you know, that was whatever. I don't remember what year that was. A couple of years ago. Got a lot of attention, of course, and the right had a field day with it, because hey, they caught the so-called liberal media lying about Bush and spreading the story. Well, the fact is, the story was true. I mean, Bush did avoid his National Guard duty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he got a cushy spot instead of going to, you know, instead of going to Vietnam, and he didn't even fulfill that. So there was this one story based on a bogus document. Well, Bernard Goldberg managed to give 3 of his 100 spots.
Can I just interject a minute?
Yeah.
I'm not even sure if that document was proved bogus. It was just questionable. They weren't
okay,
sure about
questionable.
It. Yeah,
maybe
okay.
You might be right. You might mm-hmm. be right. I'm not a real, you know, I'm not really up on that.
Anyway, the so-called liberal media ran with it.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're number 13.
And Goldberg gave it. Mm-hmm. So, but now I've given Fox News, between the several people that I could not have, sorry for the double negative, I could not have Rupert Murdoch, even if he is, boy, the rumors are he's moving to the left. I can't wait, but I'm not holding my breath.
Mm-hmm.
I could not have Roger Ailes, CEO of Fox News, really the mastermind of Fox News and the creator. And I could not have Bill O'Reilly or Sean Hannity. And did I have anybody else? No, I think that was enough.
Well, you got the Wall Street editorial board, too.
Yes, but I mean, as far as the Fox mm-hmm. family
oh, okay.
goes. I mean, I could have gone on, obviously, mm-hmm. with Britt Hume and, on and on. I could have also gone to MSNBC and had Joe Scarborough. Their MSNBC's answer to Sean Hannity. When have we, you know, before Fox came along, there was never a network. I mean, okay, networks were always big business, and everything about them reflected that, and they were part of the corporate sector, and they, you know, their stakes were with the powers that be, but we never had a whole network whose whole purpose was to be an organ for one party. Mm-hmm. This is extraordinary.
Yes, it is.
And that has
a party that has also moved to an extreme end of the spectrum at the same time, and this network has gained the largest share of the news market. I mean, amazing. So, you know, the media is the most important institution in society.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned, you know, the media can make or break a political career. So, you know, I don't know if more specifically what I can answer to that.
Yeah,
but,
well, that's an answer right there. I think let's go on to our next caller. We have somebody else in the line. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I just wanted to call and corroborate and also just kind of give another reference for that point, which is so interesting and important, that the policy of a U.S. government is to pick up those little guys and throw them around, throw them up against the wall, that one. And why? It's a reason that a lot of people, I think, today don't look at, but Noam Chomsky, in a tiny little book, not bigger than a pamphlet really, called What Uncle Sam Really Wants, chronicles the history of that design for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought people might like to know that and reference that themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, it goes back a long way, right to the beginning of this country, I believe.
Go ahead, talk about it.
Well, may I say something?
Thank you very
sure,
much.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad that that caller reminded me that we were talking about Michael Ledeen by quoting that line, because if somebody doesn't bring me back to where we were, I lose track and go off in all directions. But there was something I wanted to add about him, which was that he's had a lifelong flirtation with fascism. And an admiration for it. And by the way, I'm taking all of that from an article about him in the American Conservative magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Not from Noam Chomsky or anybody
right.
like that. Ledeen wrote a book called Universal Fascism, in which he extolled fascists, the Italian fascists. He wrote that the fascist movement, he sees it as being driven by a desire to renew, and he's always talking about this, and this is what he said about America. Let me give you another quote, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Creative destruction is our middle name.
Oh, boy.
This is me now, but you hear a lot of this from the business wing of the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when, you know, when we deindustrialize ourselves and export all our jobs somewhere and, you know, destroy our own industries, we have to keep an open mind to creative destruction. You know, if we're afraid of change, we're going to fall behind, blah, blah, blah. Anyway,
right.
Let me continue.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Ledeen, we tear down the old order every day, from business to science, literature, art, architecture, and cinema, to politics and the law. Our enemies have always hated this whirlwind of energy and creativity, which menaces their traditions and shames them for their inability to keep pace. Seeing America undo traditional societies, they fear us, for they do not wish to be undone. They must attack us in order to survive, just as we must destroy them to advance our historic mission.
Oh, boy. Well, you know, let's leave that thought there, because we're going to go out to our membership room and then another little membership break, and then we'll get back to our author. Hi, you out there?
Oh, yes, we are.
Okay.
We're here listening to some pretty powerful stuff going on in there. Y'all know corporate media lies to you, and here at KBOO, we work really hard to not only tell the truth, but to get as much out to you as is humanly possible. We're volunteer-powered, we're membership-driven, and you can choose to support the truth by dialing 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Your membership in KABU supports an amazing amount of stuff, so just do it. And there's a bonus. Chris will tell you about a special offer for the first three people to pledge.
That would be the people that call 503-232-8818. Or 1-877-500-5266. I'll give you the numbers again, but first is what you need to know, that right now we've got this special deal for the first three people, that could, one of those three people could be you, who pledge during talk radio today. What you get for a $60 membership, that's just $5 a month, EFT out of your checking account, $60 membership, you get two books by Jack Huberman. You get the 101 people who are really screwing America, and you get the second book is Bush It, an A to Z guide. That's what you get from calling up right now and becoming a member. Be our first new member of the program. Call us now, 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. It's up to you, together with this kind of programming, to help tear down this dreadful, dreadful military citadel that the country is becoming. If we don't do it, nobody else will. It's up to you. That's the thing about this kind of radio. It is up to you. You are the one that makes the difference. It's your membership that keeps us on the air. And if you don't do it, well, who else is going to? It's up to you. Now is the time to call us at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. You are the one that can make a difference right now. Be part of tearing it down. It's the Dance of Shiva.
We're pretty sure that it's not going to get better anytime soon, and likely that it's going to get worse. And so resources like KBOO will only become more critical, more important in bringing you the truth, in bringing you real public affairs, in bringing you news of your community, and supporting the community. We're going to need a lot more community support as it gets uglier and uglier, and KBO,
there's somebody that believes that Radio Free Cascadia is the antidote to the fear tactics that are spewed constantly on the air.
Well, they want to get a hold of that real good deal that you talked about.
$60, a $60 membership, special deal, first three people. That's one of them. That means only two more spots are left. For the first two people now who become members just this morning during talk radio with Per Fargan, you know that you love this programming, and you know that it's something that deserves your support. Invest in this kind of thing. You get two books from Jack Huberman. One is, and again, what a wonderful guest. Thank you so much, Jack. I just want to say that. We so appreciate it. And you know, this is an author who's very well known, nationally acclaimed, has his facts together, is funny and smart. And I think that being funny and being smart, two things that our members like to think of themselves as possessing. The books are 101 People Who Are Really Screwing America, and the other one is Bush It, an A to Z guide. Two people can get those books for a $60 membership by calling us right now at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Just a tiny amount of money, tiny amount of time, and look what it gets you.
You know, I have to say, you know, the book is the 101 people is really invaluable, because it's just crammed with facts about all these people. You know, probably like me, you get into discussions with conservative friends and relatives, you know, and this book gives you really good information to back up your appraisal of these people. It doesn't just call them names. It goes into detail. It just kind of lists a whole bunch of facts, and it's for that reason, it's really invaluable. It's a wonderful reference guide. You know, you've got all this information right at your fingertips. That's why I find it a valuable book to have. And it is yours. This book is yours for just a $60 pledge. So just call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. I'm sure a lot of listeners must have Republican uncles and aunts and parents and who else they, you know, that this might make a wonderful little holiday gift for them, you know, maybe get them thinking, maybe jog their intelligence a little bit. And who knows where it might end. You kind of, you know, you give their brain a little poke, and who knows where it will lead to. They might even become KABU members. How do they do that? Well, they call, what number do they call? They call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Chris, you're still out there. Oh, I guess not. I guess I'm pitching here by myself. That's okay. Well, I think do we have a caller on the line? No? Yes, we do. Are you there, Jack?
I'm here.
Well, you know, I read one interesting thing about Michael Ledeen. I don't think it was in your book, but you know that he had a daughter named Simone who worked for the Iraq Occupation Authority, you know, under, what's his name?
Bremer.
Bremer, yeah.
I think I did mention that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, she was just 29 years old. Her name is Simone, and she just got an MBA from some university, and she became an advisor.
They put her in charge of the Iraqi economy.
The Ministry of Finance. Now, isn't that something, you know?
I had in one of my earlier books, I had a section on nepotism in this administration, mm-hmm. and it's just amazing that, you know, the interconnections. I mean, they're like one big happy family.
Happy for them, I suppose. Yeah. You know, we should talk about Grover Norquist. Here's another guy who, well, you know, he's sort of gotten talked about here in Oregon because there have been several ballot measures in the last few years inspired by Grover Norquist. And, you know, he's this sort of behind-the-scenes guy. He's also a college pal of Jack Abramoff. And so tell us a bit about him. He also admired Lenin, of all people.
Right.
Vladimir Lenin, not John Lennon.
Right. Apparently has a portrait of Lenin on his wall behind him. What's mm-hmm. that about? Well, what that's about is Norquist regards himself as a revolutionary as well. And I would guess that he also admires the Bolsheviks' ruthlessness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we really see that revolutionary fervor in the Republican Party. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. They've become the radicals. I'm going to make a small digression and come right back to Norquist, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's something I wanted to add about the Ledeen thing and, mm-hmm. and tie in with this.
Mm-hmm.
That business about creative destruction, how he was sort of singing an ode, you know, writing an ode to destroying traditional societies.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting to put that side by side with the administration's, you know, supposed faith-based stuff, all the God stuff, and the notion of republic conservative, the very word conservative, you know, of maintaining traditions, and how misleading that is. Again, this is already common knowledge, but the religious wing of the Republican Party is where they get their votes from. The religious wing traditionally doesn't get paid back very much, and they complain about it all the time. People like James Dobson and Paul Weyrich, the big leaders of the religious right, are constantly threatening to not turn their voters out to vote for the Republicans because they get screwed after every election. The voters come out, and as soon as the votes have been counted, the Republicans go right back to their agenda of serving the interests of business.
Mm-hmm.
And capitalism, I'm not nearly as left as it sounds when I talk about capitalism, but capitalism is in fact just as Ledeen describes it. It is the great enemy, the arch enemy of tradition, because
you can't spread, you know, a Walmart without driving all the little stores out of business.
Mm-hmm.
You can't export Coca-Cola and Nikes and all the rest without Americanizing every foreign society. And that process has been pretty much complete. So, in other words, American commercial society has, in fact, destroyed traditional societies all over the world. And I've found myself thinking that what September 11th represented largely was a horrible protest against that.
Mm-hmm.
We want to retain something of our identity. I don't happen to like very much most of what Islamism is and does,
mm-hmm.
But I think that's where it's coming from.
Yeah.
That was a long digression.
Mm-hmm.
But we were talking about Norquist as a revolutionary.
He wants to drown the government in the bathtub.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's his most famous line.
Right.
I want to shrink government down to the size where we can drown it in the bathtub.
Let me ask you a quick question, then we'll go on to our next caller. You think that Norquist will get indicted? You know, there's talk that he's involved in a lot of this Jack Abramoff stuff, and that he might get indicted himself.
I just don't know. Yeah. I'm really, frankly, I haven't kept up with it, and mm-hmm. in the last couple of months I've been taking something of a holiday from the news. Frankly, there's only so much of it I can take, especially the television news.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, speaking of the media and that earlier call, I mean, after, you know, a certain point, what is the point of watching the major news networks?
Mm. I don't know.
It ends up being nothing but an exercise of reading between the lines,
mm-hmm.
and analyzing the way that they're putting the right-wing spin on everything.
Well, I don't have a TV myself. I did watch a guy named Keith Olbermann recently when we were staying in a motel. He's pretty good. But why don't we go on to our next caller? Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, you have me?
Yes, you are. Okay.
Hi. Okay, this is the Christian anarchist task sector mm-hmm. of the humanhood
mm-hmm.
Calling. And I just wanted to chip in and ask, could you tell us about your personal journey which brought you to pick up the threads which you've brought together in your books and which have led you along, keep you going? What has kept you going? How has it been? What's your journey been like, and what's kept you going?
I think, like a lot of people, a lot of this has just come out, you know, without it didn't need any planning. I mean, I could see what was coming before Bush even took office. If this is what we're talking about, you might mean that question in a more general way, but I knew what we were in for, and I hated it before they even took office. And I found myself writing that first book, The Bush Haters Handbook, I wasn't even thinking about publishing. I mean, I just had to do that. I just had to do that book. It was my way of coping. I mean, sorry for the sort of, you know, psychobabble stuff, but you know, I needed something sort of cathartic. I needed to do something. That was what I was able to do. And I was not nearly as political as you guys at the station and probably most of your listeners for most of my life, in fact. I never voted until the year 2000. Not once in my life. That has partly, I'm not bragging about it, but it was due to circumstances. I left Canada. I was out of Canada when I was of age to vote, when I was first of age to vote. And when I came here, I didn't become a citizen for another 20 years. But I finally took citizenship, during the 2000 campaign because I had to vote in that election. So the Bush administration has, I owe it a debt, for it has helped me clarify for myself what matters to me and what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a bit surprised by it myself. I mean, I don't know, you know, a lot of things, I guess, that I had in the back of my mind, came to the foreground and sort of came together. I don't know that I still have, I'm not nearly as sure of what I favor and what I would prescribe politically as I am what I'm against. I'm really coming at this, I like to think, you know, it's sort of the way everybody likes to think they're middle class. Everybody likes to think they're in the center politically. Well, I do. I'm not even that, I'm a liberal, but I'm a pretty centrist kind of liberal, and I even have certain conservative streaks. And I think that, and I often find myself getting mad at liberals for certain stupidities that have gotten us into the jam we're in today, or just about to emerge from, I hope. But, you know, we should face up to the fact that there's no way that the right could have become so strong if there wasn't some truth in some of their criticisms and lampoons of the left and of certain kinds of political correctness. And certain things had just, I don't know that I want to get into it all, but, you know, the left gave them some basic material to work with. So I'm really, you know, I have some conservative streaks in me. And, you know, right now, to me, the status quo as of the year 2000, you know, I wasn't a terribly big Clinton fan, but the pre-Bush status quo looks pretty good from where we are right now.
Even Richard Nixon looks good.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, we've been talking with Jack Huberman, the author of 101 People Who Are Really Screwing America, and it's almost time to get back to our Membership Central. You know, there's so many people in this book, and one of them is John Bolton, another guy who never did any military service. And one thing occurred to me, you see pictures of him with his big bushy mustache and big, you know, his haircut. I mean, you wonder, what would John Bolton look like without all that hair?
I've spent countless hours thinking about the same thing.
That's something Photoshop or something. But anyway, I think we have to end this show now, or end this portion of it. We've been talking with Jack Huberman, the author of 101 People Who Are Really Screwing America. And I'd like to thank you very much for your time.
Well, thanks for having me on.
And thank you for the books and everything. And now I think we're going to go to Membership Central. Let me just say that, first let me tell you what's coming up the rest of this morning. At 9, it's Movie Talk with Ed, DK, and Don reviewing the latest movies. 9:30, Laura Sonnenfeld speaking of animals, and her guest is Andrea Onken, who is a medical director at the Dove Lewis Emergency Animal Hospital. At 10, we'll hear KBOO Radio's segment from the Pacifica Radio Network special election series called Informed Dissent. And at 11 on Democracy Now, it's they're talking about the Green Party politics as it affects this election. And then at 12 noon, Alternative Radio presents George Lakoff speaks on framing the debate. So that's what you have coming up. And also, now for our, you know, our final membership break for this this segment, we have another special offer. For a $60 minimum pledge, and you have to ask the pitchers to tell you about it. I don't even know what it is myself. You're going to have to call 232-8818 to find out about it. Anyway, we are trying to raise, I think our goal for this segment is $1,000. I don't know where we are right now, but that's the amount of money we need. And so I hope to hear a lot of phones ringing out there. Chris, are you there?
Martha and I are here, uh-huh. And here's what you get. As it happens, the three people did in fact, call, and they did avail themselves of the special deal for a $60 membership. They got the two books by Jack Huberman, and so that's gone. And instead, what we have is one book by Jack Huberman, 101 People Who Are Really Screwing America, and then we also have the Dictionary of Republicanisms by Katrina Vandenhuyvel, and you get both of those books for a $60 minimum a membership. That's $5 out of your checking account every month. That is less than you lose in change or pay for parking meters downtown. And you can do it. And if you already are doing it, then why not consider increasing your membership to $120 a year? That's just $10 out of your checking account every month. And you get so much for that. It's an investment. The money isn't gone. You still get it. You've just transformed it like an alchemist into airwaves, into programming like this, terrific news and public affairs programming. The other book by Jack Huberman, we had a story on the news this morning that is probably pertinent to the title of Bush It, an A to Z guide, but call us at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. We want to thank three people: Angela in Milwaukee, who renewed her membership; Chad in Hillsborough, also a renewing member; and Elizabeth from Portland, who is a new member. You can be the next new member at KBOO simply by calling us at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
One of the things about KBOO that is absolutely precious is KBOO is diversity in action. The spectrum of the music you get, the voice from every possible part of our community, it's amazing. You know, you go to other radio stations and they define themselves as, oh, we're soft rock. We get blues, we get jazz, we get African dance, we get reggae, we get soul, we get hip-hop. The spectrum of music, Irish music, just so much of the music spectrum. We provide voice to the community that are frequently not heard anywhere. And part of our diversity says we bring voices in from everywhere, and we have, just in the KBOO offices, a very special guest. You won't get this on many stations, and right here visiting with us is Ann Coulter.
Yes, good morning, KBOO listeners. As you know, I'm Ann Coulter, and I have rabies. Those of you who become members of KBOO, I will personally come to your house and sink my fangs into your ankle. Thank you very much, KBOO members.
Oh, Ann, that's great.
Well, we let
I have to go now. I need to savage another independent radio station.
We do let the voices in, and you can support the voice of diversity, 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Don't forget, stop by. Come in. We'll give you a tour. We'll give you a bagel. And could you just go bite somebody? If you're still in your jammies, hook up the net. Go to KBOO.FM and click on Join Now. You can do it right from the comfort of your own home, or come down here. We like the company. And we got bagels.
Come
this
as you
Chris
are.
This is Chris, and I'm back, and it's 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. You are the one that makes the difference. You are the critical factor here, and it's your voice that you are putting out on the airwaves. We really need to take this back. We really need to stand up right now for what we believe in. If you have any sense of what kind of a nation that this could be, when I was a child, child, I thought it was just the coolest thing in the world that I was living, you know, that it was America. Wowie, that was really something. Now, I don't know, I haven't got my doubts. But, you know, this is a very exciting time to be in this country, and there is a lot that you can do to change things. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Be part of the solution.
Hey, Ann, do your fans ever tell you you're cute when you're angry? You know, don't forget that special deal. We have the...
special deal, Per. I'll chatter about that. For a $60 minimum pledge, two books, special deal, The Dictionary of Republicanisms, by Catherine Vanden Heuvel, Sick and Tired of Their Sinister Deceptions, Satirical Definitions of Republican Jargon, and 101 People Who Are Really Screwing America. This is ammunition in fighting corporate domination, and KBOO membership is ammunition in fighting corporate domination. You can join the fight. You can join KBOO, 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
This truly is Radio Free Cascadia, and it's your choice. You could be part of the resistance, or you can simply be apathetic. Be part of the resistance. Join us. Become a member today. Call us at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. If you have stand up for the values that you really believe in, be part of the resistance. Don't knuckle under. Don't give up. This is what you can do to keep the airwaves free, clear, truthful. This is Radio Free Cascadia. It's your own radio station, handmade radio. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Now is the time. If not now, when? When are you going to become a member? It's a matter of time.
One of the morning news stories was the World Wildlife Federation report of diminishing habitat, species being endangered. Well, independent community radio is an endangered species as corporate dominance takes over and is owned by a smaller number and a corporate beholden media. That ain't us, folks.
We're the wildebeest of the airwaves. Save us now. Save yourself. Become a member. 503-232-8818.
We are the mongoose after that corporate snake. Here we go. Don't be dominated by Ann Coulter. Fight back. Give her a taste of her own word. I hear a phone ringing. I hear people fighting back right now. Do it now, 232-8818, outside the metro area, 1-877-500-5266. Where else are you going to get all this wonderful information? Send this book to your Republican uncle. You know, it might give him apoplexy, but it might even kind of penetrate his thinking.
Why don't you buy a membership for Ann Coulter?
Hey,
Or you know, Rupert Murdoch. Just, you know, pick anyone.
What if they came to our board meetings?
There are plenty. Wouldn't that be something? Call us right now, 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Now is the time. If not now, when are you going to call? When are you going to become a member? We're in critical, critical times right now. And I'm sure that if you are, in fact, listening right now, then you already know that. So if not now, when? When are you going to become a member? 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
If you are already a member, you can up your membership. You can buy a gift membership. What a good present for somebody who maybe doesn't listen to KBOO and doesn't know what they're missing, or buy a gift membership for your Republican uncle. You know it's going to get him the monthly KBOO calendar, and maybe your uncle is going to say, ooh, bluegrass, I like a station that does bluegrass, and then just accidentally listens to Democracy Now! And starts to know some of the real true stuff. Real true stuff. You can support it. You can support KBOO Community Radio by dialing 503-232-8818. 8818 or out of the area, out in the outskirts of Cascadia, 1-877-500-5266. You know you'd miss us when we're gone.
But we won't be, because we are the resistance. We are Radio Free Cascadia, and we are exactly where you want to be, on the front lines of the culture wars. Call us right now at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Become a member during this particular break, and you're supporting the incredible programming that Per Fagerin does. He doesn't get paid, and he is a really towering, I mean, this is a bit of an, I don't know. He's a towering intellect, and he's a terrific analyst of the current political situation. You don't get that on other radio stations. Call us now. Become a member. If not now, when are you going to do it? This is the time, and this definitely is the place. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
Sure, I got two books, but I'm not kidding.
Doug, you want to sit over here?
Yeah, the mic's...
Okay, this is KBOO Portland, coming right up at 9 a.m. Thank you, Chris, and my mind is going blank. Uh-oh, my mind is blank. Well, we'll have something to do with that. So, coming up this morning on KBOO is Movie Talk with Ed, DK, and Don, reviewing the latest movies. At 9:30 on Speaking of Animals, Laurie's guest is Andrea Onken, medical director of the Dove Lewis Emergency Animal Hospital. At 10, we'll hear KBOO Radio's segment from the Pacifica Radio Network's special election series called Informed Dissent. At 11 on Democracy Now!, the issue of Green Party politics is as it affects this election. And at 12 noon on Alternative Radio, George Lakoff speaks on Framing the Debate.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Gazelle Full Circle Resale. Now accepting like-new natural fiber clothing, jewelry, accessories, and curios. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and can be reached at 503-284-4192.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub, independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizzicato pizza, and all new seating. Located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland, 503-232-5511 or laurelhursttheater.com.
Good morning. My name is Ed Goldberg. Remember, while you're listening to us, you can be calling 503-232-8818. I'm here with my friend.
Don Taylor.
And my friend.
DK Holm.
And we're going to review some movies. We don't have time for announcements or any of the other frou-frou we usually deal with. Let's start right away with Death of the President. Doug, you want to tell us about this movie?
Yes. Don, you also saw this, right?
I did.
Do you know the names of the two people who directed it and wrote it?
One is Gabriel Range.
Range, that's right.
And I'm not sure what the other person's name is.
I believe it's playing at the Hollywood Theater, yeah. And it is a faux documentary. It's not a mockumentary because it's not supposed to be funny, but there's a tradition in Britain of doing fake documentaries on serious topics, and this one imagines that George Bush was assassinated in Chicago in 2007 and that a Syrian is arrested and charged with a crime and convicted. But did somebody else really do it? And then the rest of the movie explores the mystery of who might have or might not have done it. I thought it was, for the most part, convincingly realistic, although I did recognize some of the actors, James Urbaniak and
yes.
The Freaks and Geeks mother appear
yeah.
as my problem with the movie was it didn't seem to want to do too much with the premise.
No.
I mean, they could have really, the words President Cheney should be really frightening, and they don't exploit that possibility. So I give it a C plus or B minus for effort, I guess.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with you. I was watching it. One of the problems I think with it is that the people who made it are British, so they don't have any kind of a passionate stake in American politics, because it's very dispassionate and it's very kind of at arm's length, and it's supposed to be a documentary. But you know that it is complete and utter fiction, particularly very early on when this woman who is one of Bush's advisors, and she's talking about riding in the limo with Bush, and Bush has for some reason been taken past a whole bunch of very violent protesters in Chicago, which of course never happens.
It would never happen in real life.
And she says that he turned to her and said, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit here, but not much, that he said that he supports their right to speak their mind, but he just wishes they did it peacefully. And you're going, yeah, exactly. When he's alone in a limo with somebody, that's what he's saying about protesters. My problem was, I didn't really see the point of it. It didn't seem to really make any kind of a point. And the other problem is that it comes out at a time when we're in the middle of a renaissance of documentaries, where they're getting more interesting and more entertaining and more dynamic. And to make this seem more like a documentary, by its very nature, he had to make it kind of plodding and boring. So it's, I give it a C+ as well. It was all right, but I just honestly, I missed kind of what the point of doing it at all was.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's Death of a President. Am I the only one who saw Borat?
I believe so.
Oh, good. I saved you guys an evening of hideous, stupid, vile humor.
I have heard it's hilarious.
I don't know who you asked. Let me put it that. Yeah, the whole audience was laughing. Don't get me wrong. The actual title of this film is Borat, Cultural Learnings of America for Make Benefit Glorious Nation of Kazakhstan. It's directed by some guy named Larry Charles, and it stars Sacha Baron Cohen and his victims. This is a mock documentary. Cohen plays this Kazakhstani cretin who goes through the United States, and what they've done is set up meetings with real people who really believe that this guy is a Kazakhstani filmmaker going through and making a documentary about the United States. They invite him into their homes, and he basically craps all over them. It's gotcha humor of the worst kind, pee-pee doo-doo humor. It's anti-Semitic, and I know that's supposed to be the satirical part, but after about 5 minutes, it just gets very old. There's nothing redeeming about this movie at all. The only time I laughed in this film is when I thought that the targets actually deserved this kind of treatment. One was a rodeo he goes to where he sings a horrible version of the Star Spangled Banner, but the guy who produces the rodeo turns out to be a homophobic moron, so you're glad that he gets it. And there's three frat boys in an RV who pick him up who are drunken, homophobic, sexist morons. And, you know, the fact is that all these people took him at his word also. They really believed that he was a Kazakhstani. There's nothing funny about this movie. I even felt bad for Pamela Anderson, who is at a book signing, and he runs and sticks a bag over her head because he's going to kidnap her in the Kazakhstani marriage way. He wants to marry her. This movie is awful. Everybody in the audience under 30 loved it. What can I say? I mean, I'm just too old for this, I guess. I gave the movie a C-. I would have given it an F, but I thought a couple of the targets were really worth it, and some of the jokes made me laugh. I laughed about a half a dozen times. So if you think that Jackass and Punked is entertainment, you'll probably like this movie.
So you're giving it a C for Coot, as in, if you are one, you won't find it funny.
Exactly right. Okay, so that was Borat. Marie Antoinette, you want to do the write-up on this, or you want me to do it?
You do it.
Okay. Marie Antoinette, named after...
You're on a roll.
Sofia Coppola directed it. It stars Kirsten Dunst, Jason Schwartzman, Judy Davis, Rip Torn, Rose Byrne. Great supporting cast. This is a big, empty movie about a big, empty life. After about 20 minutes, half an hour, it gets really boring, and it stays really boring for the whole movie. This is a big Christmas package all wrapped up in gorgeous ribbons and bows containing absolutely nothing. Sorry, I give the movie a C.
I agree with everything you said. I think this movie really will appeal to two groups of people. Those who love to go to movies just to look at the costumes, and people who really get enjoyment out of the true Hollywood story. Because that's all this is. It's sort of like a kind of a TV movie Paris Hilton sort of treatment of Marie Antoinette.
That's what Marie Antoinette is, Paris Hilton.
And, yeah, there's not a whole lot there. So, yeah, I give it a C as well. And it's very pretty. It is very pretty, but it's a huge waste of a very good cast as well.
Okay. And we expect more from Sofia Coppola. Okay, we need to go out to Pledge Central. And, Pear, are you out there?
Hey, I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Hey, thank you, guys. You just saved me a lot of money.
We took a bullet for the team.
A few movies I don't have to see. I know all about them just from hearing you guys.
Well, why should we subscribe to the station? Why become a cable member?
Well, because you get information, you get great movie reviews. You know, I mean, there's nothing like it anywhere else. And you also get deals. Like we have a couple deals right here. One is a $60. No, that's $60
for the passes to the Hollywood.
Honey, that's right. $60
passes to the Hollywood Theater. And another one is a pair of tickets to the Northwest Film Center. So if you like to see movies, you like to see good movies, which you will find out about here, you just call up 232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
We'd like to thank Richard Beer of the Hollywood Theater, a nonprofit organization. Mm-hmm. And Richard is one of those people in town who gets us movies we might not see normally because he actually goes out of his way to find these things. 503-232-8818. Twice a month, the three of us come to you. We try to give you some idea. It's a consumer function. What to do with your entertainment dollar, which is increasingly at risk with a lot of crappy movies and a lot of overpriced theaters and a lot of overpriced popcorn. So if you're outside of town, you know, you can call us up too, 1-877-500-5266.
Hey, it's me, Lisa Loving. I got to jump in here. Listen, y'all, Don, Doug, and Ed have secret private lives in which they're incredibly juicy people. You know, Doug actually for years was one of the arts and culture writers for the Willamette Week. And he did a fabulous job over there before he just got he took a high road and basically steered towards more independence for himself. You know, Dawn, she's just a juicy reviewer, I believe, in one of our major weekly papers here in town. And Ed, of course, is a mystery writer, a published award-winning mystery writer.
It's a mystery, too.
Yeah,
and he's a mystery. But
even
I just,
to me.
Listen, I have to say, we're only asking for $60 minimum pledges for Northwest Film Center tickets, a pair, and two regular admissions to the Hollywood Theater. Look, when I listen to this show, the movie people, when I listen to this show, then that's what lets me know what I cannot take my kids to, okay? It does save money. We're not joking around. And I just have to say, if you listen to this show all the time, if you've heard about a film from, especially Doug has got really noir taste. The guy is he's trippy. You're going to hear stuff out of Doug that you're not going to hear from, I don't know, our friend Dave over at the Willie or any of these other people. When you listen to this show, you're not only getting really kind of the connoisseur's take on what you need to be seeing, but you're also listening to Don and Ed talk about movies that are mainstream movies, but do you really want to spend $8 on them or $16 or even more if you're taking your family? This is one of those shows that goes right to the way we live now, right?
Yep.
And to support that, 503-232-8818 or toll free 1-877-500-KABU. Look, we broke out the bagel vault this morning, so we're really welcoming people in person.
Come on down.
20 Southeast 8.
Partake of our bagel feast, you know? George Bush is kind of a noir experience all there by himself. And
I don't want you to even bring that up now.
Okay. I just want to say, you know, I saw the stills from that movie, and the one that was in the papers looked very much like Jack Ruby doing in Lee Oswald.
Oh, yeah, the Death of a President film. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the film that makes you ask, what do we need this for?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, let's face
it's
it.
It's all Capricorn 1 to me. That's
everybody
all
everybody
say.
Knows how we feel about George Bush in this crowd, but this is a questionable idea.
It sure is. You know, what needs to be done with Bush is to put him up on trial and go let justice take its course.
Yeah,
you know?
Maybe Saddam Hussein can be his attorney. 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266. Let's go back in a minute or two. We got a bunch more movies to do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, keep selling. 2 minutes.
It's true. I mean, I just need to push that. $60 minimum pledge, that's nothing. $5 a month, that's just not asking for too much. $5 a month, that's that's less than a half rack of PBR cans. Come on. We need people to pick up the phone. 503-232-8818. We're in the final stretch of our membership drive, but we won't be able to finish it. We won't be able to wrap it up unless you pull out your wallet, step up to the plate. Toll free, 1-877-500-KBOO. We've got passes to the Northwest Film Center. We have passes to the stunning Hollywood Theater. And are we talking about independent theater? Are we? Is that what this theme of this show often is? Showing you, like, the difference between going to Regal Fox Towers and Cinema 21. These are people, you know, Don, Doug, and Ed. These are community people. They go out there. You know, everybody thinks they want to be a film reviewer, but I'm here to tell you, film and food is a lot harder than it looks. You review enough restaurants, you're going to get sick. And so to have people like Don, Doug, and Ed going out there watching some of these movies, actually, it's really fun to listen to, like, the wrinkle in their nose sometimes.
Hey, Lisa,
I don't
remember,
know if you do that.
Remember a few years ago, Lisa, when we tried to do the best martini in town thing?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we never got anything written, but we had a lot of drinks, didn't
we? Uh-huh, yeah, yeah. I'd say the reviewer thing is tough, and everybody thinks they want to be a reviewer, but the truth is it takes a lot of brains, and it takes organization. And you have to actually know what you're talking about, and that's what we have, Don, Doug, and Ed. And we need you to support that, 503-232-8818. You know, when you join KBOO with your Happy Pledge, you get a card in the mail. You're a card-carrying member of KBOO, and that card entitles you to discounts all over the Willamette Valley and the Gorge. So we give and give and give to you all year long. Don, Doug, and Ed give to you all year long. Now you need to give to us. You need to support this station, 1-877-500-KBOO, or locally, 503-232-8818, Bagels at 20 Southeast 8th.
Thank you. Okay, we got a bunch more films to go through. Here's a couple coming up that I kind of wish I'd seen, but I'd miss. Doug, tell us about The Queen.
The Queen is the story of the reaction with amongst royalty of the death of Princess Diana, or the former Princess Diana. And it covers about 2 weeks in the public drama and the private drama. And essentially, it's about Tony Blair attempting to make the Queen, played by Helen Mirren, realize that certain public gestures need to be made because Princess Diana was, after all, the people's princess. So it's Stephen Frears is a very good director. Helen Mirren will probably be nominated for an Oscar for this. It is a very, very, very good TV movie. It also is a movie that about three-fourths of the way through decides, you know what? We really do like the royals. The royals are very good. It's good to have them around. Let's supplicate ourselves to them further. And it just becomes an apologist for royalty, the monarchy. I was quite disappointed in that. So it makes an interesting contrast with Marie Antoinette and also the king of the last king of Scotland, I think, which I haven't seen. But I give this a B minus, this The Queen.
Okay, that's The Queen. Now, speaking of The Last King of Scotland, Dawn, you saw that.
I did. Last King of Scotland is directed by Kevin MacDonald, who did the excellent film Touching the Void about the climbers in the Andes who were trapped, and the one guy was, yeah. And he also made One Day in September. And this is an entirely fictional film based on a novel about a young Scottish doctor who decides he wants to go see the world and have adventures, and he literally spins a globe and points, you know, at
Uganda.
At it, and yeah, and he ends up in Uganda. Through a happenstance of just happening to be in a weird place at a weird time, he ends up running into Idi Amin, who becomes enamored of him, partly because Amin was fascinated by all things Scottish. And so he hires him to be his personal physician. And so this, and he's initially and very charmed by Amin, and gradually begins to realize that the guy is a psychotic nut bar and that he's in a very dangerous situation and unsure if he's going to be able to extricate himself from it. I found this movie to be just compelling and fascinating and marvelous in every way. I know that not all critics are saying that, so you have to take what I say, you know, for what it's worth.
And Forrest Whitaker?
James McAvoy, who plays the Scottish, he was Tumnus in the Chronicles of Narnia. He's the young guy. He's very good. But the main attraction is Forrest Whitaker as Amin, and he is brilliant. He's charming and funny and delightful, and then at the same time creepy and scary and dangerous. And he should get nominated for an Academy Award for this performance. I think he is absolutely marvelous. I would recommend this movie to just about anybody. I found it to be just a brilliant thriller and just marvelous. I'd give this an A-, and recommend it highly.
Good. Forest Whitaker has been bubbling under the surface for a long time. Maybe this will do it for him. Okay, that was The Last King of Scotland. I saw Flags of Our Fathers, a movie that's probably not what you think it is. It's directed by Clint Eastwood, stars Ryan Phillippe, Jesse Bradford, Adam Beach, who's been great in every movie he's ever been in, and Barry Pepper also. This is about the flag raising on Mount Suribachi on Iwo Jima in World War II, and the real photograph and the second photograph, and what they did to the guys who raised the flag in that famous photograph. The Clint Eastwood, who is, I guess, a libertarian. You know, he's been called a Republican and a conservative. He's really way beyond that. He's heading toward the right wing anarchy kind of a thing, and he kicks government in the behind in this movie, because these guys who are ambivalent about what they did anyway are exploited to the max to sell war bonds. And that's what it was all about. The economy was tanking. There was no money to support the war. They were getting most of their money for the war, apparently, if you believe this film, from selling war bonds for American citizens kicking in to support the war. The movie is above politics for the most part. It is about the exploitation of heroism, the definition of heroism, what it is to be a warrior and what it is to fight in a war. Of course, it's hard not to see some parallels, you know, with the current situation. Everybody in this movie is terrific. Eastwood, you can tell this is coming from his guts. And he and Steven Spielberg are co-producers. So we not only get this righteous anger from Clint Eastwood, but we also get the moral lecture from Steven Spielberg. This is quite an interesting film. Not a great film, but a very good film. I give it a B+, and I think it's really, really worth seeing. That's Flags of Our Fathers. Don, Catch a Fire. I don't mean that literally.
Catch a Fire is, I can't catch on fire because I'm juicy. Catch Fire, directed by Philip Noyce, who has an interesting career in that he's done some thrillers like Clear and Present Danger and Patriot Games. But he also more recently has been doing more political films like Rabbit Proof Fence. And he also directed a great remake of The Quiet American that not enough people saw. This is a film, it's based on a memoir. It's not a biographical story of a man named Patrick Chamuso, who was arrested in 1980s apartheid-era South Africa under suspicion of having set off a bomb in the power plant where he worked. The irony being that he himself was actually one of the few workers at the plant who was trying to keep his head down and not be political and was not involved in any political organizations whatsoever, but a set of circumstantial evidence led the police to think it was him. He's tortured in custody, partly by Tim Robbins, who plays a South African detective named Nick Voss, who is cold and calculating and rather soulless. And eventually his wife is brought in. His wife is tortured as well. And that's what makes him crack and admit to doing the thing that he did not do, at which point Tim Robbins' character realizes that this guy's innocent because he got all the facts wrong of the crime and lets him go. This, in turn, turns him into a terrorist. Now he goes and joins up with the revolutionaries.
Well, there's a lesson in that for all of us.
Yeah, exactly. And it is an excellent, excellent film to show you precisely why torture does not work, precisely why it creates revolutionaries, it creates terrorists, it makes people join the very cause that you are trying to fight. Beautiful film, gorgeous to look at. Very difficult. The only weak point in it for me was Tim Robbins, because as good as he is, he's Tim Robbins. It was very hard for me to suspend disbelief.
Nuclear Lush as a South African. Yeah. Okay.
But I would give this movie a B, and I would rate it higher if they had cast someone other than Tim Robbins in this role. It's an excellent film.
Okay, so that's Catch a Fire. Doug, Running with Scissors.
Well, this is the movie that's the adaptation of the memoir by August Burroughs. It was apparently very popular and read amongst reading groups all across the city, if not the land.
Was this an Oprah book?
I don't know if it was an Oprah book. It certainly has been accused of falsifying things, so it may qualify as a Oprah book. It is a terrible, terrible movie. One of the worst movies of the year, if not of the century and all generations before us.
Oh, my God.
This movie is loud, embarrassing, poorly acted. Nothing really happens. The premise of it is that August Burroughs is the son of a kind of a crazy woman who's a aspiring poet or poetess, married to a school teacher, and she gets involved with a psychiatrist who wants to basically takes over her life to the point where she gives her child, the narrator, the August Burroughs character, to this crazy family, and a lot of very uninteresting and unshocking things happen to him thereupon until he finally escapes and goes to New York. Boring, tedious, outlandishly done, exuberance without anything really fun happening in these scenes of exuberance, like when they try to create a skylight in the kitchen, the two of the crazy children. I couldn't stand this movie. This is a D minus. This is an F movie. This movie is F. I'm writing F right here on this piece of paper.
I see it. You're writing
Annette Bening. Writing with scissors. Horrible.
Annette Bening, no, she's getting good words on this.
She's horrible. She's always, as far as I'm concerned, she's always horrible. She's very theatrical. She plays the mother. She's very theatrical. She's supposed to be a little bit in this movie, but, she always is. She's not. The only one that I liked in the movie was Alec Baldwin, who plays the father, not the psychiatrist, and Brian Cox plays the psychiatrist. Baldwin's in the movie for about 5 or 6 seconds, and those are the best 5 seconds in the movie.
Okay, that was Running with Scissors. Loud, Quiet, Loud is a documentary about the Pixies, directed by Stephen Kander and Matthew Galkin. This is their reunion tour, 2004, 2005. They had problems. They broke up. They were apart for 6 years. A couple of them had solo projects, Kim Deal and Black Francis or Charles Thompson. It's basically, this is for fans only. I mean, if you're a Pixies fan, you probably should see this. There's good music in the film. It's the Pixies, after all, but there's not enough of it. And the fact is that they're middle-aged people. They've settled into more or less domestic lives. There's not much drama here. They're just driving around, and they're really careful with each other because they really like each other. They don't want to bring up old problems. One of the members of the band develops a little pill habit, and that's all the drama that the thing can muster. If there were more music in it, I would say go see it no matter who you are. It's a bit uninteresting after a while because their lives are fairly uninteresting, especially for touring rock and roll musicians. And I really love the Pixies, and I play their music still. But I have to give the movie a B-minus, Doug.
I think that's about right. I give it a B-minus also. I enjoyed watching it. I don't know that much about the Pixies. But, you know, there have been so many good documentaries about rock bands. It's not as good as the one about the Ramones. And it's not as good as the one...
About Metallica.
About Metallica. It's a little bit better than the one Dig about the Dandy Warhols. So it's about in that level.
Mm-hmm.
I think they could have done a little bit more with the background of the group for people like me who don't really know anything about them. But I enjoyed watching it.
Okay, we only have about 4 minutes left. Let's try to run through these quickly. Now, Dawn, you and I saw The Prestige.
We did.
Just quickly, my take on The Prestige is that it's a pretty good movie. I give it a B+. Twist after twist after twist. It's directed by Christopher Nolan, knows how to do a twist. After a while, the twist got a little tiresome. But they ended just about right. If the movie had been 10 minutes longer, I probably would have knocked it down a half a grade. Terrific acting. I really, really like Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale. Michael Caine is always there to pick up any movie. And the women in the movie are also very good. And high marks for giving David Bowie a role as Nikola Tesla.
Oh, yes.
The role he was born to play. Dawn?
This is actually one of my favorite movies I've seen so far this year. I've seen it twice. The second viewing, it was a little like going back and seeing Nolan's Memento or seeing Fight Club. And now, once you know all the secrets and you know all the twists, you can see all of the ways it's alluded to in the film and appreciate the structure of the movie as a whole. It's a very tightly made, very... very interesting movie about deception and I can't that. Go see it. I really, really loved this film a lot.
And that's Prestige, The Prestige. Doug, can you do Little Children really quickly? I know this is an important movie.
The second film by Todd Field, a former Portland resident who did In the Bedroom a few years ago, starts Kate Winslet and Jennifer Connelly. It's based on a novel. It's a little like American Beauty, but it's much better than American Beauty because it doesn't have the snide criticism of the characters. It's one of the best movies of the year, I think. Really enjoyed it. I would recommend everybody to go see it.
Letter grade.
I give it an A.
Excellent. Okay, Short Bus, this is John Cameron Mitchell's new film. I interviewed him right in this studio a few weeks ago. A bunch of actors you never saw before. He was sitting in that chair, Doug. This is about sexual hang-ups and their discontents in Boho, New York. I guess the message that sex is part of a healthy life, but none of these people seems to be uplifted by their sex lives. They're all hung up by it, and I don't really, and all bent out of shape. I don't really know what Mitchell was trying to do, except to say that you should follow your muse, I suppose. It's not bad, but, you know, you could see it as a rental. You don't really have to run to the theater to see it. I give it a B-minus. Doug?
I think it's a B-minus movie. It is a, it advocates that group sex is the solution to all your sexual problems. It's now playing at the Cinema 21.
Okay, we have to get off because people have to ask you for money. Thanks very much for tuning in. We are here first and second and fourth Wednesdays of the month, and we will be here next year for you as well. Bye.
Yeah, you could look for tickets there.
Well, here we are. Can you hear me? Okay, yes. This is your chance to call 503-232-8818. Outside the metro area, 1-877-500-5266. We have people here waiting to hear from you. You know, we have those premiums, the tickets to the Hollywood Theater and tickets to the Northwest Film Center. Those are for $60 pledge. And so you can help KBOO, and then you can get some, go out and see a really good movie, because the Hollywood Theater and the Northwest Film Center are where the really good films are playing. And so everybody wins that way. That's the way that we do it at KBOO. We like to keep our KBOO family happy and educated and aware of what's going on in the world. We don't hide from the world. We want to change the world. And one way to do that is to become a KBOO member. You know, you can come down here and learn about how to run a radio station. People come down here and they volunteer. They get training. They get to, they are part owners of this radio station. They can vote for boards, for the board, and they can even run for the board. They can join the committees that help decide what programs we put on the air. There's all kinds of things that happen here at KBOO that you can be part of. And it's, this is a very exciting thing. There's not many cities and towns in this country that have this kind of a radio station. Recently I, took a quick trip from here to South Dakota and back, and you know, I had my radio at that part of the dial, you know, where all the good stuff is, and you know, there was really nowhere that I find a station like KBOO. It's just they don't really seem, you know, I hear there are community radio stations, but they're not easy to find, and the ones that I did hear are nothing like KBOO. You know, you can find NPR on most of the places, but there are a lot of gaps. There are a lot of places you drive to where you don't even get that. You just get kind of preachers and weird music, you know. So this is people here in Portland, you know. You should realize how fortunate you are to have this kind of a radio station kind of at your disposal. You know, you can just tune it 24/7, any time of the day or night. There is something on KBOO worth listening to. And so
so you know, I'm on here with you, Pear, believe it or not.
Oh,
we're in a different window. We're
oh, that's
talking.
Right. Oh, I thought I was all by myself.
Well, I know you're all by yourself, and I thought, oh, Pear's all by himself. But I can give the numbers. I actually know what they are.
All right.
503-232-8818. Or if you are outside of that local calling zone, it is toll-free, 1-877-500-5266. And, of course, if you're listening online, let's not forget those people that are listening all around the world, KBOO.FM. You know, coming up here at 9:30, Lori Sonnenfeld hosts Speaking of Animals. She has a guest this morning, Andrea Onken, who is the medical director of the Dove Lewis Emergency Animal Hospital. So for those of you who are sitting patiently by your radio waiting for that show to come on, this is a good time to call, because you're going to want to listen to what Lori and Andrea have to talk about. So give a call, 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266. What's going on out there, Pear?
Well, we have one. We have our operators are standing by. One of them is taking down the information from a call, but the other operator is sitting
waiting
there,
for the phone to
end. waiting to hear from you.
Eating bagels.
So that's right. We have this big bag of bagels. Come on down and help us consume a big bag of bagels.
Yeah, and you know they're not that bad. I heard.
Oh, they're pretty good.
I won't say anything about.
They're kind of a whole grain bagel here. There's all kinds of bagels. You know,
and so, I had a bagel for breakfast.
Sure. Well, come on down and visit with us and. That's number 20 Southeast 8th Street, right down between Burnside and Ankeny. You can't miss it. You know, it's a 20-story corporate headquarters. Ha! No, it's a little blue, right. A little blue building. It's a little blue building that has a tree in front of it and a bench outside.
And those awesome headphone bike racks.
That's right. That's right.
So
you can't miss it. Yeah. So come on down and visit with us. We have our goal for this. Let's see. I don't know if that's for the last show. I see $700 on the board there, but
we've
I don't
got to get some phone calls in. Let's get that $700 rolling in here. You know, one of my favorite things to do is to double that goal. They put $700 up there. I want to see $1,400 come
rolling.
Well,
that would be really nice if we could do that.
We could do that if you pick up your phone, though.
We're trying to wrap up this pledge drive.
That's right, and we need to wrap it up. And, and I know all the listeners want it to wrap up, too. So 503-232-8818. There are people standing by waiting for that phone to ring. 1-877-500-5266.
Do it now.
Yeah, I think I'm. No, are you getting ready there, Lori? No, I can't really talk to Lori. So let's go to speaking of animals. Bye.
Choosing sights, choosing sights. Man, I hate to be choosing sights. But I'm choosing sights. My sight is the wild side. I wish I didn't have to be choosing sides. Indivisible humanity increasing to insanity. I find myself caught in the middle of a war against the
wild. Hey, welcome to Speaking of Animals. I'm Lori Sonnenfeld. This show is on once a month, and it's always on the fourth Wednesday right after Movie Talk. 9:30 to 10. In case you're listening for the first time, this is a show about animals and animal issues, companion animals, wildlife, and animal rights. And I did announce last month that I would be starting a feature where we talk about one or two adult animals that need a home. And I want to apologize to the person who called. Someone did call me at 503-204-0444. I'll give that number again in a minute. And leave me a message about an animal. And her message fell off the voicemail, and I was not able to call her back. So you can still call me if you want to. 503-204-0444. If you want me to announce an animal that is in need of a home, an adult. I can't do kittens. And we can do two or three per month. And I do have one cat to tell you about. Her name is Annie, and she's a Siamese mix. She's medium-sized, and she's a senior. She's a female, and she is, she looks very Siamese, and she's adorable. The note here says this very pretty 11-year-old lady might be just what you are looking for if you've always wanted a Siamese. She might be a little timid until she gets to know you, but once you've gained approval, she is very sweet. And Annie just has no bad habits at all. She's okay with kids, with other cats, but has never been around dogs. And she's litter trained and obviously needs to be strictly indoors since she is declawed. And if you want more information, you can either on Annie, you can either call, let's see, you can call 503-675-3928 or call me after the show down here. Or you can email Wildheart. I think it's Wldheart, so there's no I, but Wildheart at easystreet.com, or get in touch with me for information about Annie. So, I'm excited that we have a guest waiting on the phone. Andrea, hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm excited to be talking with Andrea Onken from Dove Lewis. You're the medical director there?
I am.
Thank you so much for calling.
Absolutely.
And we're going to talk for a few minutes, and then we'll be talking about the pledge drive for a few minutes, and then we'll come back and wrap up.
That sounds great.
So tell us a little bit about how Dove Lewis began. And what is it?
Okay. Dove Lewis began about 32 years ago now. It was basically kind of the brainchild of some local veterinarians who were seeing their own emergencies after hours and realized they were getting to a point where they really wanted there to be some sort of emergency service in town so they didn't have to come in the middle of the night. So they basically developed this nonprofit with the help from some donations, actually C.S. Lewis being the person that a different C.S. Lewis in town here became the person that actually donated the money for this, so it was named after his wife. And what we are is
his wife Dove Lewis?
It's Dove Lewis, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, so that's where the name came about. And it is a basically a 24-hour nonprofit hospital that we do strictly emergency and critical care medicine in support of the other veterinarians in town. So we see, for instance, their cases have emergencies after hours when they no longer are open, they will come to us. Or if they have some cases that need 24-hour care and there's not going to be anyone there, or they need intensive type of care, they will send them here to have that care done here.
But the public also brings their animals.
Yes, they do. That it's one of the places that is known to be open after hours, and any time they have an animal that they need to get in quickly to see a veterinarian, they can come in here.
And how is the ER staffed?
Well, it's staffed with 24 hours a day. There's at least one veterinarian on staff, and we actually have two locations. We have both a downtown location, or essentially a Northwest Portland location, and then a Southeast location. And the Southeast is not open 24 hours. That's open only just after hours, nights and weekends. And there's veterinarians at both locations whenever the places are open. Plus there's technicians and receptionists. So there are plenty of people here, both to receive emergencies and to take care of the patients that we currently have in the hospital.
Mm-hmm. And do most cities have something like this?
Yeah, there are more and more now. It's become kind of common now to have that, and partly because pets are just becoming so popular, and the local veterinarians just really can't support their own emergencies, and people are expecting more for their pets. They're expecting higher quality of medicine. They're expecting someone to be there for them when they have an emergency mm-hmm. with their mm-hmm. pet. So yeah, even smaller towns are starting to get emergency hospitals because so many people have pets these days.
So I understand that you're a teaching hospital. What does that mean for people who bring in their animals? Are they seeing a student or an intern or a resident, and how much of the time are they seeing someone who is still learning?
Right. We do have students come through. We also have an internship program and a residency program. What that means is the internships come here just after finishing veterinary school for a year of intensive training, where the residents come here. They've already completed an internship. They are basically looking to specialize in emergency and critical care medicine, so they're even in more intensive training. That's a 3-year program. Students do come through. Students never take primary responsibility for a case. They're essentially, what they'll do is they'll tag along with the veterinarian in charge of the case. The interns are, when they're on, they're always on with a senior veterinary staff member. So certainly they do take in a case and work with a case, but there's always a senior staff veterinarian kind of watching over them and making sure that everything they do is done correctly and to the best of their abilities. So, and the interns here are extraordinarily intelligent and conscientious doctors and do a great job.
And how do you manage the stress for the staff?
For the staff.
For the staff? Yeah, for the doctors and the and
yeah,
the staff.
It, you know, it takes a certain type of person to become a veterinary emergency doctor. Mm-hmm. It is a stressful position. We do see a lot of course, very sick and injured animals. There's long hours. There's nighttime hours and holiday hours. We're here when nobody else is open, so that tends to be the holidays and the weekends and the middle of the night. And so it takes, first of all, a certain type of person, a person that maybe thrives on the adrenaline a little bit. And at the same time, everybody with the staff works, although they do work long hours, we also give kind of big gaps of time off between between their run of shifts. And so everybody kind of has their outside life that they can go and attend to kind of get through it all. And the staff, they really get along great. They have a good time together. And there's always those great successful cases that make them feel so good that they realize it's all worth it. There's certainly times that it is stressful and it is difficult, and nobody is immune to that here, that's for sure. But we all kind of help each other out. We get along. We have a good time when we're together at work.
That's
so
great.
Yeah.
Have there been changes to pain management for animals during treatment and pre and post surgery?
Absolutely. That's probably one of the most rapidly evolving areas in veterinary medicine. I think there was a big period of time where people just didn't recognize pain in animals. They weren't even sure if animals were capable of feeling pain the way that we could. And what we've done over the past probably 10, 20 years is start evolving pain management, looking at it like we look at pediatric pain management. You know, we've got a living being that really can't communicate with us, and so they certainly can't tell us how much pain they're in. And so we've learned now to just assume pain rather than to assume they're not in pain. And we're using more and more different types of pain medications. We're starting to use what's called multimodal, where we use multiple different pain medications to kind of attack pain in different ways to really help control it, and starting to realize how much pain interferes with healing, with quality of life, with, you know, their ability to be comfortable in the hospital. If they won't eat if they're in pain, and so they're certainly going to have a harder time healing. So that's become a huge, important issue in veterinary medicine lately.
That's so great.
Yeah, it
is. I'm so glad to hear that.
Yes.
And what kinds of things, briefly, because we're going to have to go to our pledge central here in a moment, but what kinds of things do you do to minimize stress on the animals while they're in treatment?
Besides that, I mean, that's the first, probably foremost thing we do is make sure they're not in any pain. We make sure they have a comfortable cage or run with warm and dry bedding and keep that clean. Also, every one of the staff members here loves animals, and so we are in there, you know, petting them and talking to them and doing everything we can. We try to keep the dogs and cats kind of separate from each other so they don't have to stare at each other across the room, which is not so fun for cats. And So everything we can do, if necessary, we might give them a little sedation to help them sleep. And just anything we can do to kind of, you know, make it seem like it's almost a treat to hang out in the hospital. Yeah.
It's probably very difficult. I know in people hospitals now, they're finding ways to accommodate people's need for a caregiver with them. And I'm sure it's hard for you there, but are there any ways that you accommodate people's need to be with their pets during evaluation or treatment?
Yeah, we do. It's a little bit more difficult in the intensive care unit, which is, of course, the same even in a human hospital, because treatments are going on constantly and there's a lot of stress in there. But we have, in our new hospital, we have a nice room that's strictly made for visiting. It has a nice couch, and it gives people a little privacy, and we have a little garden outside with a fountain that people can sit outside with their pets there. We certainly encourage visits. People can come back and sit with their pets. They can be with them, you know, during certain treatments. And
that's good.
Yes, absolutely.
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay, so Andrea, stay on the line.
Okay.
And I want to talk with Pear for a moment in our membership central, who I can see right through the window, I think. Hi, Pear. I can kind of see you waving over there.
Here we are. Here we are.
All right.
You know, we're waiting to hear from our listeners. We have some nice thank you gifts on offer. The one that really stands out is a book, The Way We Eat, by Peter Singer and Jim Mason. And that can be yours for a $60 minimum pledge.
And, you know, Peter Singer is a renowned animal ethicist. He's a philosopher, and he's written a lot of books, but this is his newest book, and I'm really excited about it. So if animal rights issues and animal the ethics of whether we consume animals or not are important to you, I think this would be something that would really interest you. And that's, again, with a $60 minimum pledge. What's that phone number?
The phone number is, here in Portland, it's 503-232-8818. Outside the metro area, it's 1-877-500-5266. Or if you're online, it's www.kboo.fm.
Oh, so. And the other thing we've got is this great CD of the talk that you might have heard on the air yesterday.
Oh, Eric Schlosser?
Yes.
Chew on this. Yes, we have that. That is also for a $60 pledge.
503-232-8818.
Plus, we also have Igniting a Revolution, Voices in Defense of the Earth. That's for a $60 pledge.
And so, this is the one and only opportunity you have to support animal programming during this pledge drive. This program is about animals, and it's the only show on KABU or on the air in the Portland area that I know of that focuses on animal well-being, animal issues, companion animals, wildlife, habitat, anything to do with animals. That's why we call it Speaking of Animals. So if this show has become something that you look forward to, I invite you to please join KABU now and become a member of this incredible community and become a voting member of the foundation. And the number to call is 503-232-8818.
Give your companion animal a membership, you know.
That's good.
You can do that, you know.
Yes.
We have, you know, some of our programmers have their companion animals that come on down here. They don't get on the air, but they just kind of, they sort of become part of the crowd here at KABU. It's kind of a funny family, you know, and here we are. We're sharing this little building on 8th Street, making good radio, and the number to call is 503-232-8818.
What's the toll-free number?
That is 1-877-500-5266.
And, oh, I wanted to say that we have a couple other thank you gifts that are special things that were offered to me for this show or for our folk show on Friday, and their
right.
music, their
That's
tickets.
Right. Yes,
but
they are.
They're for sold-out shows. The Chris Smithers show this Friday at 8 p.m. at the Walters Cultural Arts Center in Hillsboro, which is just a 200-seat theater. It's converted from an older building. It's a really wonderful place. And Chris Smithers is going to be live on my show, my folk music show this Friday, which is from noon to 1:30. But if you want this pair of tickets, you need to call sooner. And it's a sold-out show. And again, it's Friday at 8 p.m. It's Chris Smithers. He's an amazing folk artist.
And we have tickets for Misty River and John McEwen and the Bills.
Yeah, the Bills are great.
And this Merge, is that the name of the group? Merge?
Yes.
Okay. Those are all available. They're all at this Hillsboro Cultural Arts Center.
Well, Merge is at the Fez Ballroom.
Oh, okay.
But yes, the Bills,
that's right.
John McEwen, and Misty River, and the Chris Smithers were all generously donated by the Walters Cultural Arts Center on East Main Street. It's 527 East Main Street in Hillsboro. So, again, the phone number, 503-232-8818. I would be personally gratified if we get a couple of calls. What is our goal for this show?
Well, I think for our combined, for this show and the last show, I think the combined goal is $700.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, we have a ways to go on that. Uh-huh. We need to hear from people out there. 503-232-8818. Outside the metro area, 1-877-500-5266. Or get online at www.kboo.fm. So those are three ways to get in touch with us. We have people here waiting to hear from you.
And they especially want to hear from you if you have a cat or a dog.
Here, it's me, Lisa Loving. I got to bump in here.
Yes.
I'm here, Lisa. I'm here with Lori and Pear. Listen, this show about animal rights, this is another one of those shows that we put on the air because of popular demand. There were people who were speaking out and saying, why don't you have a show looking at these compelling issues? There's a huge animal rights community in our area. It's huge. And we need to hear from people out there that care. 503.
Here's somebody.
232-8818. I just also want to point out to you that, when you get, when you become a KBOO member, you get a card in the mail. It entitles you to discounts all over the region. One of those discounts I've got to put out there, it's the pet psychic. It's that cool Faye Petrikowski, 20% off discount for Animal Psychic. And her website is inner-design.net. Animal Psychic, I mean, I just got to put that out there. By the way, there's quite a few people who purchase memberships for their dogs. I don't think we've ever had anyone that purchased a membership for their cat. So I'm just putting the challenge out there.
Thank you. And the phone number is 503-232-8818. Give us another call. I want to go back to our interview with Andrea from Dove Lewis, but we would still love to have the phones ringing in support of animals, in support of animals on KBOO. I brought my dog in last week, and it was really fun. Fred really enjoyed being here. So, Andrea.
Yes.
I have a couple of other questions for you.
Okay.
I know Dove Lewis has been through a big expansion. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I do. It's very exciting. We've just finally moved out of our far too small rundown accommodations here in Northwest and basically built a new hospital across the street. This is now a 22,000 square foot building that is wonderful. We finally are able to kind of do some of the things we've been dreaming of doing. We've separated our emergency service from our intensive care unit, and we have two surgery suites. It's a wonderful building. We're nonprofit. It's strictly built on donations.
I was curious if medical fees help cover the operating expenses. How far do they go?
Right. They don't cover the cost of the building in the least. Our medical fees purely cover the cost of our medication. Since we're nonprofit, everything goes right back into the hospital, into the cost of medications, into the cost of staffing, keeping the lights on 24 hours a day, keeping the building heated.
But the building is a whole separate
The building is strictly built on donations, and so we're still collecting donations just to pay for this building. But we needed to get it built and get moved in, as we were just overflowing at the other hospital. So we moved in this summer, and it's wonderful. We have more examination rooms. We can accommodate all the people that come through. The comfort room I'd mentioned that people can visit in, the Serenity Garden that we have, the two surgery suites. We have a little bit more, a lot more space to practice the great medicine that we want to practice. And so with little growing pains at first, we're settled in, and it's absolutely wonderful place.
Do you want to tell us a little bit, if you have it in front of you or can, the Dove Lewis Manifesto? Or can you tell us a couple of the things that are in it?
Yeah, well, our goal is basically we support the human-animal bond. That is kind of our goal. So we have many programs oriented towards the human-animal bond, including our program where the Delatte program, where we take animals out to two hospitals and to basically help with healing. You know, just the interaction with the animals is such a healing experience.
The pet therapy program.
Exactly, the pet therapy. We have We also have a stray animal program, and so we're able to treat, you know, it's funded strictly on donations. We're able to treat the strays that come in, even if they don't have an owner. Yeah.
So then what happens to them after they're treated?
Basically, we do everything we can to help find the owners for them. If we can't, they often go off to their whatever county they came from. They go to that shelter, and hopefully they find the owners for them. Occasionally, somebody here adopts them because, of course, we're all animal lovers.
And the person who brought them in, if they want to shelter them until they get a home, can they do that?
Absolutely. They can take them over, and of course, the one thing we ask is that we continue to look for the true owner, and they can adopt them if the owner never appears.
Right. Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So it's great. So that's really been a big part of our... We're also here to support the veterinary community and kind of be in addition to what they can do with our ability to do the critical care and some more of the intensive medicine. We can support their practices by taking over where they kind of run out of their of ability or you know, of the equipment. We can take over for them. So,
do you want to give the website address? Do you know?
It's basically dovelewis.org.
Okay.
I can't get any more.
Because we're running out of time. I also want to mention that you have this fabulous pet loss support group that happens a lot.
We do. We do. It's free to anybody in the community that has suffered a loss of a pet can come in and get together with our grief counselor and with other people that have lost pets and basically talk through whatever
Good.
They need to talk through.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. We'll talk more about that next time.
Sounds great.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Please keep calling. Everybody out there, 503-232-8818. Thanks for calling.
Our side is the side of life. Our side is the wild side. I'll shout it from the mountain peaks. I'll scream. I am human, yes, but I'm choosing sides. I'm choosing sides.
It's 10 a.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next on the Wednesday morning radio zine, KBOO's radio segment from the Pacifica Radio Network's special election series called Informed Dissent. Stay tuned at 11 for Democracy Now! The issue is Green Party politics as it affects this election. And at noon on Alternative Radio, George Lakoff speaks on framing the debate.
Dr. Nine! I'm back!
Have you secured the media outlet for the 900 Club's inaugural broadcast, Schlichtenstein?
Yes, Doctor. Monday, October 30th at 11 p.m. on KBOO during a radio theater show called The Southern Radio Project.
You diminutive divot!
Ow!
Radio theater? Community radio? Monday night at 11? You might as well be answering the Barry Manilow Marathon.
But, Doctor, if your nine wave can penetrate the cultured, independent minds of the KBOO radio theater audience, listeners to enter PRCOM channel stations will be easy pickings.
You're right, Schlichtenstein. This is merely phase one of Plan 9 from Uber Space. The sudden radio broadcast on Monday, October 30th at 11 p.m. will make the exorcist look like Pippi Longstockings. A Halloween horror show written, produced, and directed by...
And remember, you can call right now. There are people standing by to take your pledge here at the toward the end of our membership drive, 503-232-8818, or outside of the local calling area, it is toll free 1-877-500-5266. This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from the Portland Alliance, the city's oldest alternative progressive newspaper, reporting on issues ignored or distorted by corporate-dominated media and providing a voice for social justice, activists, environmentalists, trade unionists, and the progressive community. Information at 503-239-4991 or theportlandalliance.org. And now, informed dissent.
I'm Mitch Deseret at Pacifica Station WBAI in New York, and I welcome you to another show. Oregon is a quiet rural state with an unusual political tradition. Rather than leaning simply left or right, Oregonians were traditionally pragmatic voters, tending more toward progressive and libertarian stands instead of plain Democratic or Republican Party control. We go to Lisa Loving at KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, for a look at how corporate influence has changed the face of a state.
Oregonians legalized the vote for women years before the 19th Amendment was ratified. In 1964, Oregon's Senator Wayne Morse cast one of the only votes in Congress against the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, the resolution that eventually mired the United States in the Vietnam War. But in recent times, that's changed. Starting in the Reagan era, Oregon has weathered a seemingly endless series of ballot initiatives that have transformed not only the state's political scene, but its tax base, its educational system, and more. The result is like a scene from the Frank Capra film, It's a Wonderful Life, except here, Pottersville is not a dream. How did a progressive populist state become a laboratory for neoconservative economic ideas? It all boils down to a few key factors: Oregon's open ballot initiative system and the state's lack of controls on campaign contributions. Oregon public interest attorney Dan Meek is a veteran of many electoral battles. On November 7th, Oregon voters will decide on a pair of initiatives he's been working on for nearly a decade that would limit political contributions.
Basically, what we're trying to do is reinstate in Oregon the limits on political contributions in state and local races for public office that we, the voters in Oregon, overwhelmingly adopted in 1994 by a vote of 72%. Those limits were then thrown out by the Oregon Supreme Court in 1997. The court concluded that the existing version of the Oregon Constitution doesn't allow any limits at all on political contributions, which is unique among all of the states. No other state Supreme Court interprets their Constitution that way. And it leaves Oregon as one of only two states, really, with no limits on contributions. The other one is New Mexico. Every other state has some limits on political contributions. So the first thing we need to do is amend the Oregon Constitution to allow the enactment of limits by either the people using the initiative process or the legislature, and our Measure 46 does both of those things. Since the Supreme Court decision in 1997, the amount of money in Oregon campaigns has skyrocketed. It's gone from $4 million to $42 million 4 years ago in the last cycle that included a governor's election. That's when the money really goes up in Oregon. The governor's race 4 years ago cost $15 million altogether. This year it'll probably cost $25 million just for people running for governor. The record in the general election spending for governor 4 years ago, Kevin Manick spent about $4.5 million, Kulongoski about $4.2 million. Already, Ron Saxton, the Republican, is over $6 million, and he's got a long way to go, and Governor Kulongoski will probably come in somewhat less than that. But our political system in Oregon is totally dominated by the corporations and their contributions. The vast preponderance of the money comes from corporations. They historically, in the last 10 years, outspend labor unions by 5-1, and they outspend everyone else by hundreds to one, including any group involved in the environmental protection or social justice. So we want to reinstate the limits from 1994 and close the sorts of loopholes that experience with campaign finance reform laws have shown to exist over the last 10 years.
Dan, okay, there's the corporate influence. Mm-hmm. Is it outside corporate influence, or is it influence from inside the state? And do you see an issue with entities, groups, organizations, or corporations that are maybe based in Texas or Washington, D.C., dominating our political process?
Well, the large corporations that make large contributions in Oregon are, of course, multinational beings. I consider publicly traded corporations to be that. For example, you know, our utility Portland General Electric is often referred to in the press as a local utility. I don't understand that, since less than 2% of the stock of the company is owned by Oregonians and 98% is owned by others. Of course, right now for PGE, 57% remains owned by Enron and 43% remains owned by others. But the folks who make the big contributions in Oregon are the big corporations. It's the utilities, which are owned by their shareholders, of course, worldwide. It's the drug companies. It's the tobacco companies. There are some significant local contributions, however. Most notably, the Oregon Restaurant Association represents the little outlets that you find on virtually every street corner in Portland now for video poker, essentially slot machines run by the state. The Restaurant Association contributes about $500,000 every 2 years to legislative candidates and has a lot of influence in Salem. And one of the things they get for that is the fact that Oregon pays at least double the amount of commissions to video poker outlets that they would need to, double the commissions that are paid for similar outlets by Canadian provinces, for example. And that takes over $100 million away from schools or other public purposes in Oregon. Instead, it goes to those delightful little sandwich shops with their video poker outlets. And of course, one thing we absolutely need in Oregon is the opportunity for mindless gambling on every street corner. And our current system guarantees that that will continue.
What are some of the other long-term effects that this lack of campaign contribution limits has on our tax base, for example?
Well, Oregon, there's a group called the Council on State Taxation, which is funded by business and does an annual survey of state and local tax burdens, mainly so they can go to argue to some states that, look, if you don't reduce your taxes, we're moving to Oregon. Oregon now ranks 47th in overall business tax burden on the state and local level. If you look at the state level alone, it ranks 50th. We're the last per dollar of economic activity in business taxes. And most of those taxes would otherwise be paid by big corporations with big revenue. In Oregon, the largest revenue producer on the state level is the Oregon income tax. The percentage of that tax that's paid by corporations has gone down from 18% 25 years ago to only 4% now. And it's going to go down to 3% next year when our delightful kicker kicks in and reduces corporate income taxes by 61% for next year. The kicker is this bizarre formula where during the legislative session, the state economist makes an estimate of revenues for the state for the ensuing 2 years. If the actual amount of revenue coming into the state income tax is more than had been estimated by the state economist, 2% more, then all of the excess over the original estimate gets refunded, either on the one hand to individual taxpayers or on the other hand to corporate taxpayers, and those two pools are calculated separately. In most years, the corporations are the only ones who get money back. The individuals don't. And it's really just a bizarre system that in most years causes a massive corporate tax reduction in Oregon that nobody ever voted for.
That was Dan Meek, an Oregon public interest attorney and activist. But how do these contributions affect Oregonians' daily lives? Investigative reporter David Goodman, writing for Mother Jones magazine in 2004, detailed the impact of just one ballot initiative on Oregon schools and the role conservative activist Grover Norquist played in its outcome.
What I did was to go take a look at the impact on classes of what was the ballot initiative that came up in Oregon to repeal tax increases. And the place that I focused on were some of the better-off suburban areas of Portland, Hillsboro in particular. Hillsboro was a community that was known for having strong schools. It was certainly a place that had a very strong tax base. You've got, Intel, Nike, everybody that surrounds Hillsboro there. And when I went into Hillsboro High School, which, is a very nice campus, clearly a pretty well-endowed school. What I found inside the walls of that school was really quite shocking. I found the first class that I walked into was a math class where there were 38 students who were broken up into small groups. Now, what happened? happens when you have 38 students in a class, the first thing that you notice is the noise level. Just having that many people, and particularly that many teenagers in a room, there is just this din, this noise, that from the get-go makes it very hard to teach or to learn. The teacher, of course, these classes were not made to, you know, hold that many students. So the teacher, the math teacher, is having to shimmy sideways through rows of students to get to different groups that are needing his attention. And, you know, what really emerged there was kind of a law of the jungle, and that is that the kids who were, you know, learning reasonably well, or perhaps had parents who could help, or they were going to do okay. They were going to survive even this situation. But it was the kids in the middle, and certainly the kids on the you know, on the slower end of the learning curve, they were the ones who were really being sacrificed. And the math teacher was despairing in his conversation with me about how he knew he was losing kids. He just simply couldn't keep up with, and that was just one class. There were classes with 48 and 50 students. One of the ways that, and I interviewed a lot of students, the students were very angry. One of them said to me, a girl who was on the soccer and the track team, she says, all these adults say, we don't want to pay for school. And I say, well, you went to school. Did someone do this to you? And that was a sentiment expressed in various ways by a lot of the students, feeling very angry and basically sold out by their parents and, you know, by the older generation. The sense that they'd gotten their education and it was just too damn bad if kids today needed to suffer, you know. So the idea that, oh, kids have it so easy, they're too coddled. Nothing I saw in that classroom, you know, when people say, oh, I went to classes, we had classes of 30, and, you know, we walked 2 miles through the snow in school, those famous kind of lines that people will say. It simply isn't true. The kind of classes that they have now, I mean, for one thing, we use technologies now that if there's only, say, 15 computers in the classroom, well, then it's really a problem if you have 30, 40, and 50 students in the room. It means that the bulk of the students never get their hands on the technology. But there was another measure. You know, students are very intelligent, and they were seeing what was happening to their school. And the early graduation rates and the dropout rates were skyrocketing. And the principal was nearly in tears as she described this to me, that her job had now become this triage of how do you, you know, what can you cut, where can you shave even, you know, a few more dollars. The library was no longer staffed. They had laid off the librarians. This is education in America in, you know, 2004 in Oregon, and this is a result of this anti-tax movement, you know, whose kind of biggest spokespeople, Norquist and Army, are currently, you know, have the ear of the president.
Investigative reporter David Goodman.
And we will pause here in this program, Informed Dissent, to ask you to come to your telephones one more time. Support KABU. Support our membership drive. Give a call, 503-232-8818. And now I'm going to be joined by Pear out in Membership Central.
Here
Pear.
Here we are at the eye of the universe.
Yay.
If you're outside Portland, 1-877-500-5266. Or online, it's www.kboo.fm. So give us a call. We have got a special, a big book special. Now, this is a set of three books for a $120 pledge, and that's an easy one to do if you do it $10 a month. And these are the books you get. One is How to Steal an Election, and the next one is Brave New Ballot, the battle to safeguard democracy in the age of electronic voting. And then the third one is What Happened in Ohio by Bob Fitrakis. He was right there in Ohio when that last election in 2004 got stolen. In fact, we interviewed him on KABU. I remember that. And so you have these three books for a $120 pledge.
Hey, and I got to point this out. This one that's called Brave New Ballot, The Battle to Safeguard Democracy in the Age of Electronic Voting. That's by computer science professor Aviel Rubin, who is a whistleblower. Mm. He and his computer science students just started looking at these issues around the Diebold machine, like literally as a classroom exercise. They pulled on a little thread. They came out with the whole issue. That's fascinating stuff. These books, like the retail value is about $60 or so altogether. So for $120, you're investing your time, your energy, your brains, and your resources in KABU. 503-232-8818 is the number to call. Long distance toll free to you is 1-877-500-KABU. So, Pear, we put together this Pacifica Network, this whole series. It's a whole series about the elections called Informed Dissent. Mm-hmm. This one that we're listening to today is the one that KABU did. It's the one that we did. Interview Grover Norquist. There's actually...
Oh, we got Grover Norquist?
He's coming up.
Oh, my gosh.
So we got David Goodman talking about his investigative work. Of course, that's Amy Goodman's brother.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Grover Norquist. George Shrub, comedy by George Shrub, is coming up. And this hilarious political rant by the famous Scooter Norton from KPFT in Houston. And that actually, this is a, the Informed Dissent, it's a whole series. It's like 8-part series of 2-hour segments. And this particular one we're listening to now, it aired in Pacifica affiliates all over the country on Saturday morning when it was first brought out. But, that's the kind of thing we do. We network with other people. We just reaffiliated with Pacifica, and that matters a lot. And we need you to get behind us and fund this kind of programming. 503-232-8818 is the number to call. Come in person to 20 Southeast 8th, half block south of Burnside in Portland, Oregon. We'd love to see people. We've got the bagel vault open.
Yes, dip into our bag of bagels, our big bag of bagels. Anyway, we were just talking about Grover Norquist this morning when we interviewed Jack Huberman, who wrote this book, 101 People Who Are Really Screwing America, and Grover Norquist was one of them, and I think he was pretty high up on that list, something like number 37, if memory serves.
Yeah, I had to edit a little bit out of this Grover Norquist that mm-hmm. we're going to hear. One of the things that freaked me out about him, of course, he's the director of Americans for Tax Reform is his current group, but he's famous for just existing in the Washington Beltway and dumping stacks of cash in states. And basically, I'm just going to put this out there, hijacking their political system, their tax base, all these things.
I wanted to ask I guess our author didn't know, but Grover Norquist might be indicted himself as part of this unfolding Jack Abramoff scandal,
Abramoff's the Favian, they're going down. That mm-hmm. thing, the ripples are just getting wider
Congressman
and wider.
From Ohio pleaded guilty, mm-hmm. and so anyway, maybe Grover Norquist will be wearing a number one of these days, too. So we can only hope. But anyway, you can hear Grover Norquist. Stay tuned to KBOO, Informed Dissent, which is this new show we're getting from Pacifica.
And we're participating in it.
It's like a big potluck. You put stuff in, you take stuff out.
It's yummy.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So if you're outside the Portland area, toll free, it's 1-877-500-KABU, Portland area, 503-232-8818 is the number to call. Website, you can contribute on kabu.fm. But we need to hear from people. We have loads of thank you gifts, and that's all fine and good. But we need to wrap up this happy pledge drive and get back to our regular programming. So you know what? I have to toss this out. My personal favorite thank you gift right now, though, tickets to the Boo Bash. Boo Bash. Remember when we used to do the Boo Ball for more than 20 years? KABU hosted the biggest Halloween party in the entire metro area. And there's a lot of reasons why we sort of let it go for a while there, but Chihito Wimbush, our outreach director, is bringing it back. It's Halloween night, $60 for a pair of tickets to the Boo Bash. I'm looking at you. I'm saying biggest party anywhere. Two stages. There must be a half a dozen bands. If Chihito's doing it, that means it's world beat. Plus, there's some other funky, exciting beats in there, but you can't have any these happy gifts until you call us up, 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO.
And if you are at work in your cubicle, just go to tap in www.kboo.fm. And that way you just tap on the Join Now button, and that will get you to us. So you can do this under the eye of your boss.
All right, thanks.
James Williams of the Community News Production Institute is also a street vendor in New York City. While at his table near City Hall in Manhattan, James asked potential voters who they thought control the elections.
Hi, this is James Williams, and I'm with
David.
David, where are you from?
I'm from the Bronx.
And we're trying to find out who controls the upcoming elections. Is it the voters or is it the big corporations?
I would say the corporations.
Why is that?
They got more power than the voters.
Bigger corporations have more money, more influence, and of course our candidates go to the bigger corporations for support rather than coming to the people.
One person on the street is definitely not as powerful as a corporation that has, you know, power reaching all across the country and, you know, in different arenas. They have knowledge of things that we don't have knowledge of, and connections, and I mean connections of everything. Networking, knowing the right people is really what gets you as far as you go in the world. It's not really, you know, what you know, it's who you know.
I think it's a voting public.
Why is that?
Mainly because of what went on during that fiasco in Florida.
And I see you have a sign. You're a Vietnam veteran?
Definitely.
Well, we have elections coming up in November. Could you tell me, who do you think controls the elections? Is it the voting public or is it the big corporations?
Well, I'm going to say 50-50 on it, with the corporations getting the upper hand in the situation, because they're the ones with the finances to back these politicians. So I would say basically the corporations would have the upper hand, but the voting public has a lot to do with it, too.
This is James Williams of Community News Production Institute, reporting for Informed Dissent.
I decided to go ahead and do what we were talking about.
You incorporated?
Yes.
You have a corporate seal?
Yes. I will sell shares in myself.
Who is going to buy them?
I will.
What will you call your corporation?
Me, Incorporated.
That's what I was going to call my corporation.
We're going offshore to avoid taxes.
Isn't this tax evasion?
Tax avoidance.
Why do you get the me corporation?
Well, I got you a corporation.
What's my corporation called?
You.
You Incorporated?
Yes.
And you get me, and I get you?
But I made you the president of me.
And you made yourself the president of you, I bet.
Well, sure I did, and we each get to be vice president of our own corporation.
What about a treasurer?
The cat.
Let the cat be the vice president of you. I want to be the treasurer.
Well, it doesn't really matter.
The treasurer handles the money.
We're taking all the corporate money and giving it to the president.
Oh, I love the president.
I love the president.
And then what do we do?
We declare bankruptcy, Chapter 11.
That's good, right?
Sure. We get golden parachutes.
Mushroom Cloud Theater.
Grover Norquist is more than the Pied Piper of tax breaks. It was he who once said, "I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub." Norquist spoke with Informed Dissent about his newest organization, Americans for Tax Reform.
Americans for Tax Reform is a national taxpayer group made up of individuals who support the idea of lower taxes. We ask all candidates for federal and state office to sign the pledge not to raise taxes. In addition, we've helped to organize center-right coalitions of broader center-right groups, people who care about the Second Amendment, homeschooling, deregulation of businesses, property rights, all of those sorts of organizations, so that the broad center-right can work together, the taxpayer movement being a very important part of that broader coalition. We work with a number of taxpayer groups and civic groups, Jason Williams in the state of Oregon, and have worked with property rights groups in Oregon, taxpayer groups in Oregon.
How do you decide when to participate in state measures?
Well, Americans for Tax Reform endorses state initiatives when they, you know, make sense philosophically, and when they have strong support within their state. We wouldn't go into Kansas and invent an initiative, but if Oregon or another state have a strong initiative that's being put forward that is especially the one that that could be a model for other state action, that's not sort of unique just to Oregon, but is the sort of thing that if Oregon did it, California and Wyoming and Massachusetts might want to do the same thing. We are very interested in promoting good ideas in Oregon that can also be implemented in Florida.
Okay, I just want to ask one follow-up question. It's kind of a hard question. It's in Oregon right now, we have a taxpayer bill of rights measure on the ballot, and there's been quite, I'm going to say, a parade of people from Colorado, which passed a similar measure, including quite a few Republicans basically barnstorming the state of Oregon, saying, we made a mistake. This taxpayer bill of rights was very bad for Colorado. How do you respond to those people who are saying that the taxpayers passed a bad measure and they didn't realize what they were doing?
Well, it's wrong on several fronts. First of all, the taxpayer bill of rights in Colorado had as part of it that you could put on the ballot something to allow taxes and spending to increase if you wished. It wasn't made in concrete, and that's what Colorado did. They narrowly, very narrowly, passed a, to open the door for a five-year period where taxes can be raised, and then after that, the Tabor limit comes back into being. So Tabor was not repudiated. Tabor was used. That's like saying that the Constitution was repudiated when somebody amended it, even though the Constitution has a vehicle in it for amending it. So they're dishonest if they tell you that Tabor caused a problem. If what they mean to say is that the spending restraint that the people of Colorado insisted on for 10 years in a row made it impossible for the spenders to walk away with as much money as they wanted, absolutely. Taxpayers of Colorado have $3 to $4 billion in their pockets that without Tabor would have been spent by the politicians. So it was very successful in keeping spending and taxes lower. When a majority of the voters wanted to raise taxes somewhat, they were able to do so. Tabor worked very well, and the governor of the state, who was the one who wanted to, you know, pass the change to allow Tabor to be lifted, for the spending limit to be lifted, he'll point out repeatedly that, look, that was all within the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. It was part of the limitation was how you could set it aside briefly if you wanted to, if voters wished to.
That was political lobbyist Grover Norquist. He's currently under federal investigation for his ties to convicted former lobbyists Jack Abramoff and David Safavian.
The role of corporations in the U.S. government is our focus of attention this week on Informed Dissent, a matter so pervasive that the coins don't even have a flip side. I mean, can you imagine trying to talk about this present government outside corporate control? That's not a subject. That's an empty set. That's a Zen cone gone hideously wrong. In these days of Abramoff and DeLay and Farmco, Halliburton, the Carlyle Group, Cheney, Rumsfeld, the Bushes, this isn't a government. It's a holding company. You can't even get a grip on it. You can't even turn it upside down. It's like a fractal virus. You try and make fun of it, but these guys are worse than the most evil, vicious joke you can come up with. They are the death of irony. We have to dig irony up every week and kill it again and again, and still we can't keep up. People from my generation point out that the death of irony occurred a long time ago, when Henry Kissinger got the Nobel Peace Prize. But think about this. Right after the Second World War, the CIA recruited Nazi intelligence and SS officers as agents to help us fight the evils of communism. Now, when Nazis are recruited to fight evil, it's going to take irony a lot more than 12 steps to recover from that. And when you tuned into The Daily Show, which I'm sure many of you do, and they play a video clip of some bozo that apparently somebody voted for. And when it's over, why does Jon Stewart just sit there with his mouth open and an expression of confused horror? Well, I'll tell you why. Because that's the joke. There's nothing left to say. They won't even leave us a punchline. There's nothing to add. Everything is collateral damage. You can't twist it any worse than it's twisted. Irony lies moldering in its grave, and now they've killed satire. What next? Parody? This government and the whole corporate central committee are like a giant nuclear-powered, organic, mutant, ideological steamroller driven by some intergalactic brain-damaged villain from a third-rate L. Ron Hubbard science fiction story. So where do we go? What do we say? Well, when the present is like a nightmare and the future is too horrible to think about, you can always look back. After all, it's not that hard to be a humorist when you have the whole government working for you. Will Rogers said that. He had a lot to say on the subject of this week's program. During the Hoover administration, he wrote this for a periodical called The Exposure. Quote, "Now I see where the Senate Investigating Committee is called a recess for 10 days. Scandals were unfolding themselves so fast that the committee couldn't get one bribe straight in their minds before another one would pop up. So they have retired to see where they're at. Now, while that committee may be rested, the exposure never rests. We are on the heels of the evildoer 24 hours of every bribing day. I hope by the time this reaches an eager, waiting public that they will have two lawyers to conduct this oil investigation. Yet we can't find two of them that have not worked at some time or another for an oil company. There has been at least one lawyer for every barrel of oil that has ever come out of the ground." Unquote. This is Scooter Radio's Informed Dissent.
Hey, thank you, Scooter. Now, Scooter lives down in Houston and does great radio down there. And if he was going to call in from Houston, he would call 1-877-500-5266. If you're here in Portland, the number to call is 503-232-8818. If you're kind of holed up in your cubicle at work, pretending to work, the number to tap in is www.kboo.fm. And either all three ways will get in touch with us, and you can donate your money to KBOO to keep this stuff coming, and you can get a special premium, which we have. We have a for a $120 pledge, that's only $10 a month, you can get three books. How to Steal an Election by David Moore, Brave New Ballot by Ariel Rubin, and What Happened in Ohio by Bob Fitrakis. And they all deal with what could happen in 2 weeks from now, where an election might be stolen again, yet again, by these electronic voting machines.
You know, Guy Pear, I have to say, I'm Lisa. I'm here with my super cool friend, Pear. We are playing segments from a Pacifica radio series called Informed Dissent. It's exploring themes and issues in the upcoming midterm elections, which are Tuesday, November 7th. And we want people to support this programming. We've got copies. We've got CDs of a variety of these Informed Dissent shows. This is perfect to send to your independent or Republican mom or dad or brother. The number of 503-232-8818 or toll free 1-877-500-KBOO. I love the comedy. I love Mushroom Cloud Theater. And throughout this whole series, they do 2-minute comedy segments. And it's all about this husband and wife team who love the president. And they always say that, "I love the president." It's hilarious. There's another segment where they collect corporate flags. And it's like they didn't have anything to do with the flags. They didn't know where to put them. So they put them on their tank. They don't even drive a Humvee. They drive a tank. Anyway, it's really satisfying. But anyway, that's the series. But Perry, you're talking about these books about the upcoming elections. You know, Tuesday, November 7th, from 6 to 9 p.m., KBOO is preempting everything to bring you live election night coverage. We're going to have live election night coverage. We always do that. You can count on us being there to do that. But we need you to do something for us. We need you to call 503-232-8818 or toll-free 1-877-533-8818. 500 KBOO. As Per said, for a $120 contribution, you get three awesome books about this upcoming election. And I'm putting this out there. You need to read them all before Tuesday, November 7th. Okay? The three books, $125 contribution, that's only $10 a month. You know, when you look at how much money the Bush, you know what? There was a story out yesterday where the Carlyle Group is trying to buy the Los Angeles Times.
Oh, is that right?
What would you do? What would you do if, I don't know, KBOO decided to sell underwriting time to the Carlyle Group? You know, this elections coverage brought to you by the Bush administration. How would you like that?
Oh my God! I think our listeners would be coming down here with their pitchforks and torches, running us out of town. We wouldn't do that. That would be a terrible thing to do.
On the other hand, we are encouraging people to come down here to 20 Southeast 8th. You can bring a pitchfork or torch. That's cool.
I use it to spear a bagel out of our bagel vault.
The bagel vault is waiting. It's ready and waiting. $120 pledge, and you get a book, How to Steal an Election, the inside story of how George Bush's brother and Fox Network miscalled the 2000 election and changed the course of history. I don't know. Does that sound good? Yes,
you know,
it does.
I was here, that was an election night special. I was down here. I remember that very well.
We were all here.
We were getting the returns, you know, and these exit polls were coming in showing that Kerry was winning in Ohio, and all of a sudden, bang, 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 they were calling the election, and everything just went upside down.
In a minute, we're going to go back to informed dissent, but the three books you get for a $120 contribution are How to Steal an Election, the inside story of how George Bush's brother and Fox Network miscalled the 2000 election and changed the course of history. You also get Brave New Ballot, the battle to safeguard democracy in the age of electronic voting. That's by Aviel Rubin. That's the computer science professor who he and his class stumbled on this story and realized that these machines don't work right. What Happened in Ohio by Bob Fitrakis. Don't even need to describe that one too much. Bob Fitrakis, Harvey Wasserman, famous in their own right, investigative journalists. They were on the Ohio recount story from day one.
They live there.
503-232-8818 is the number to call. 1-877-500-KBOO. Come in person to 20 Southeast 8th. We're going to rush back to informed dissent, but call. Are our elections proof that America is a democracy? Or are they an elaborate money machine that rewards the powerful at the expense of children, families, and the working class? For the upcoming midterm elections, almost $1 billion in total campaign contributions have already been raised by congressional candidates alone. But the question remains, who wins and who loses? Pratap Chatterjee is the program director of CorpWatch, based in San Francisco.
Well, corporations exist to make a profit, and in order to make a profit, they need to be able to get projects, sell products, and therefore they need help from people in high places. Now, in many countries, this is done easily by slipping a bribe under the table. In the United States, it's a little more difficult because of the laws, but it's simply legalized as opposed to necessarily done under the table. There is no difference between what happens here or in other countries, except that it is recorded on paper often. You will see many instances of corruption and fraud, the sort of Cunninghams of the world, or the Abramoffs. Those are somewhat unusual. I mean, I think the problem isn't the people that are getting paid behind closed doors. The problem, in fact, is what's wide open. The fact that companies can pay for elections in the United States, which makes it kind of remarkable in the sense that corruption is so legal in this country.
That was Pratap Chatterjee of CorpWatch. This is where the rubber meets the road for corporate campaign contributions, as investigative reporter David Goodman found in his report for Mother Jones about Oregon's educational system, big business, and the ballot.
Well, the story has legs because, Oregon has, worked to sort of patch together and cobble together solutions to this problem. But the tax revolt marches on. And in my state, where I live, Vermont, there is now an effort to do the exact same thing. It's called a revolt and repeal movement here. Same deal. Digging into, cutting taxes, in particular targeting education taxes. I think the important thing for people to do here in every one of these cases is to look who these organizations are. Citizens for Sound Economy, as just an example, and they are an important example because they are a national organization, they describe
activists, and they also say that they are, quote, grassroots citizens dedicated to free markets and limited government. And you think, well, nothing particularly wrong with that. This is people, you know, of a particular viewpoint banding together to advance their cause. But it's anything but a grassroots movement, because as you look at who they are, their funding at the national level comes from the largest corporations and right-wing foundations. So the major donors for Citizens for a Sound Economy are General Electric, ExxonMobil, General Motors, Eli Lilly, Cigna, Archer Daniels Midland, Shell, and Unilever. And Public Citizen described them as, rather than being a grassroots voice of consumers, it is more accurately, as they say, quote, a front group for corporate lobbying interests. The Washington Post detailed how Citizens for Sound Economy led the fight to torpedo a multi-billion-dollar federal plan to restore the Everglades while collecting $700,000 in contributions from Florida's three largest sugar companies, which had thousands of acres of cane-growing land at stake in that battle. CSE also took in more than $1 million from Philip Morris while it campaigned against cigarette taxes. So what these really are is front groups for these large corporations. And interestingly, Oregon's business community figured that out quite quickly. And so you had some of the major Oregon businesses, namely the Oregon Business Association, which includes Nike, Columbia Sportswear, Hanna Andersson, and a number of other Oregon-based companies, they fought this effort because they saw what it was going to do on the ground to their communities. So it's just always important to follow the money. You know, when somebody announces that they are a grassroots group, they spring up in your town and suddenly are curiously well-funded. It's a safe bet that that money is not coming from the neighborhood. It's coming from national organizations with a vested interest in this.
That was Mother Jones correspondent David Goodman.
James Madison, who said that in a democracy, you have to protect the wealthy from the masses. This remains true today. The only mystery is why Wall Street isn't called Madison Avenue. Not all the framers were pro-wealth. Jefferson warned about the power of corporations before they even existed. He was so anti-wealth that he died too poor to free his slaves. It's a lucky thing we have corporations and other wealthy people, because democracy is not cheap. Today, elected office is more expensive than ever. Corporations outspend unions in electoral contests 12 to 1, or even 24 to 1, depending on who you buy your statistics from. So it stands to reason that we must compel the unions to get permission from their members to spend money in politics, or we could take away their members. What have unions ever given their members, aside from the 8-hour day and the weekend, both of which are overrated, if not un-American? As President Bush once explained, throughout the 20th century, small groups of men seized control of great nations, built armies and arsenals, and set out to dominate the weak and intimidate the world. You can see that W does have his introspective moments. Some say the strength and vision of our corporations have resulted in the first truly worldwide empire. I prefer to think of us as a benevolent dominatrix. But if we are an empire, we are unique in that class. The world's first ever non-imperialist empire. Not that we're perfect. Somehow, extreme wealth and power seem to result in an increase in poverty. No one knows why. There were some who claimed to know, but they were convinced to know other things. But as a result of the economic structures in the world, it seemed that sometimes people are casualized, collaterally, daily even, through poverty and other quaint afflictions. This is natural. After all, companies love misery. Money may be the root of evil, but a man needs his roots. Some question this, but basically, you're either with us or you're with the euro. Remember, the business of America is none of your business. This is George Shrubb. sharing my point of view with you, so you won't need to own anything.
Well,
George Shrub appears through the discourtesy of an organization which chooses to remain unknown.
This Democracy, trademark registered, is brought to you by the Carlyle Group.
Wah, just kidding. Just no, you bring us to you. Come on, we need you to call 503-232-8818. We need to hear from you guys. That was David Lippman doing George Shrub. You know, he's been on tour before. He's billed as the world's only singing CIA agent. Mm. I love it when he goes, companies love misery. I love that. But we need more people to call, because it's time for us to try reaching towards that goal, that oh-so-modest goal of $1,275. 1-877-500-KBOO is the number to call. And we are offering this awesome trio of books for $120 minimum pledge, How to Steal an Election, the inside story of how George Bush's brother and Fox Network miscalled the 2000 election and changed the course of history. Also, Brave New Ballot, The Battle to Safeguard Democracy in an Age of Electronic Voting, and What Happened in Ohio by Bob Fitrakis and Harvey Wasserman. So all that for $120.
And we've got an election coming up, I hear, in just about less than 2 weeks. So I don't know. We're all sitting here waiting and wondering what's going to happen. KBOO will be on the scene. We will be having a team of reporters at all the little election night.
Just got a crew of 50 people that does live election night coverage here in KBOO. Yeah, and actually, I'm hoping that this year we can have a little bit more comedy theater for our live election night coverage. Mm-hmm. We're going to have Rock'em Sock'em Robot matches. Have you ever noticed Rock'em Sock'em Robots? One's red, one's blue. I mean, it's a no-brainer. But that's what we do. You know what? We take your pennies when you call 503-232-8818 or toll free 1-877-500-KBOO. We take your pennies and we do a lot with them, a lot. We spin straw into gold around here, and that's what we're asking you to contribute to.
Come on down and see us. There's a lady down here just a little while, about half an hour ago, came down and made a pledge in person. You know,
20 Southeast 8th. We're located in Portland, Oregon on Southeast 8th, a half block south of Burnside. There's parking outside. There's bicycle parking. Our bike racks are shaped like great big headphones. And we're on like three bus lines.
Little blue building between Burnside and Ankeny on Southeast 8th Street. Come on down and have a cup of coffee with us. See what you're getting for your money. You can see our palatial headquarters down here.
Looks a little more like a bunker. Let's be real. But that's cool.
Right.
I mean, come in
the
person.
The last bunker of democracy.
Yeah, right, indeed. Mm-hmm. But again, we're listening to Informed Dissent as a series that we put together along with the rest of the people at Pacifica, the Pacifica News Network over there. And we're waiting for people to call. We need people to come in person to 20 Southeast 8th. It's too darn quiet. It's just too quiet.
Give us a call, 503-232-8818. Outside the metro area, 1-877-500-5266. Give us a call. Do it now.
Yeah, in a minute we're going back to the show. But again, I love it when people come in person. We've got a bunch of things for $120 pledge. It's a packet. It's a whole stack of books about the election. Remember, this stuff is important because we're going to be going through this whole thing again in just a couple weeks, Tuesday, November 7th. But let's one more time go for the numbers pair.
232-8818. Outside the metro area, 1-877-500-5266.
Federal Elections Commission reports on campaign filings contain millions of entries every week. One nonpartisan organization takes that raw campaign data, crunches the numbers, and makes them available for anyone with a computer. That group is the Center for Responsive Politics. Their website, used by reporters, activists, and politicos alike, is opensecrets.org. I recently spoke with the center's communications director, Massey Rich.
Well, the thing to remember in campaign finance and elections is it's not what's illegal that will shock you, it's what's legal. There's so much money going in to fund U.S. elections because candidates are reliant on private money, and corporations tend to have more money than labor unions, tend to have more money than the average voter to contribute to campaigns. And so, once again, in this election cycle, business is responsible for about three quarters of the money going to fund federal politics.
I noticed that on opensecrets.org, you have a new feature about lobbying. Can you talk about that? What's new about it? What are you doing with that issue?
Yeah, we're really happy with this database because we think it's going to shine a lot of light on an area of political influence that a lot of people don't understand and really may only have come to be familiar with because of the Jack Abramoff lobbying scandal earlier this year. Of course, campaign contributions, that's the money that helps the candidates run for office. Once they're in office, the lobbying really kicks in. This is the money spent by private interests, corporations, labor unions, ideological groups, others, to influence the policy. These are the hired guns that go up to Capitol Hill and press the case for their clients. Far more money is spent on lobbying than is spent on campaign contributions. So far in the 2006 election, candidates themselves have raised more than $1 billion. We haven't really worked out an estimate of how much money is going to be spent on the election as a whole, but just that's in a two-year period, that's fundraising. In lobbying, just last year, was on federal lobbying, was spent $2.2 billion. So there's a lot more money spent on lobbying, and it really hasn't been tracked very well, and that's what this new database is going to do, to really track who these professional influencers are and what they're looking to get in return. Just remember, it's always an investment. Campaign contributions are an investment. Lobbying is an investment. And it's an investment with a really good payoff. It is a small amount of money put in for what you can get in return through government contracts, earmarks, specifically for your cause or your organization or business in legislation, tax credits, and that, other sorts of incentives and perks.
Are there any surprises for you at opensecrets.org as you put together? Your website is just massive in terms of data collection. It's also very accessible for just plain citizens that want to go there and find out, just to follow the money in their own state. But as you put this information together, are there any surprises for you for this upcoming election?
Every time I look at this site, I'm surprised by something. One thing that's surprising is just how much money goes into federal politics. We're not saying it's necessarily a bad thing. You gotta raise money to run campaigns. There isn't any public financing of elections, congressional elections to make up for it. So you do have to lean on your friends and people who may want something in return. But just how much money is in the system is always surprising. One thing we just introduced on opensecrets.org is a new database tracking the personal finances of members of Congress. And we found that more than a third of our elected representatives in Washington are millionaires. They have net worth of $1 million or more. Now, compare that to the average American population, about 1% of Americans have net worth of $1 million or more. So, I don't know what the percentages is that we should feel comfortable with, but it is worth realizing or reminding ourselves that the people in Washington who are sent to Washington to represent the voters and constituents are in many ways not like them. They may see the issues that they're legislating every day in different ways than their constituents do, and some of that has to do with their backgrounds, their own personal experiences.
Do you, at the Center for Responsive Politics, do you have a sense of the role that labor unions, labor is playing in terms of these efforts at campaign finance reform?
Well, the labor sector is a big giver to political candidates and parties as well, but they only account for a little over 4% of all the money in this election cycle. I mean, business, again, is about three-quarters of the money going in here. But the Democrats have a lot to gain from labor. Labor has always benefited the Democrats, and that likely won't change anytime soon. They have, in addition to how much money they actually contribute to candidates, they do a lot of other election-type activity of getting out the vote, educating voters through their voter guides, trying to mobilize their membership. So they are influential, and generally, when you see some sort of reform proposed that would curtail the influence of unions, you see them in these strange alliances with corporations. Normally they would be on opposing sides of issues, but when it comes to campaign finance reform, they side together and are generally in favor of preserving the status quo and not taking a whole lot of steps that might curtail their influence.
That was Massey Rich, the communications director for the Center for Responsive Politics. Find out more about their work at opensecrets.org.
Hi, I'm Kathleen Stevenson, and I'm here with Marvin Simmons of Northwest Vets for Peace, and we're going to talk to you for a few minutes about the need to call KBOO at 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266. Marvin is one of the people that you've heard on other Wednesdays, last Wednesday, for instance, on Veterans Voice, which is a regular monthly program here on KBOO. And I pulled him in to talk to you with me right now because we're offering a special deal here on four thank you gifts put together in a package. They are Full Spectrum Disorder, a book by Stan Goff, Home from the War, a book by Robert J. Lifton, The Bonus Army by Paul Dixon and Thomas B. Allen, and Jarhead by Anthony Swofford. We're offering those four books with a $120 membership at this time. So this is a great deal. We're hoping that we can interest some of you out there in this particular sort of an anti-war special.
Yeah, these books are really interesting because we know a couple of the people who wrote these books. For one, Full Spectrum Disorder by Stan Goff. He was a Special Forces soldier and was pretty gung-ho. And then when the Gulf War started, he really turned against it. And he was part of the Military Family Speak Out. And his son was in Iraq. And he just really turned against the war.
And that's a huge book, if I remember.
That's a great book. It's a great book. And then The Bonus Army, if you remember a few years back, we interviewed Paul Dixon, I think it was, on The Bonus Army. And that's a really interesting book because what it deals with is the World War I soldiers and how they were misused by the government. And then after they got out, they were misused again. And the people who started that movement started here in Portland. The Bonus March started right here in Portland, Oregon. Wow. And went all the way back to D.C. And it was really interesting. To read the book, it really talks about how the Bonus soldiers were made up of different people. I mean, they were whites, blacks, Hispanics, anybody that served in the First World War. How it was really great group of people that did that. And so that's a really a good book to read if you want to read it. And then Home from the War by Robert J. Lifton, that's a good book also because he's a Vietnam vet. And if you read the stuff he talks about in Vietnam, it's exactly what's happening in the Gulf. Huh. The same thing happening in the Gulf.
Well, we just have a few seconds to offer this, so please, if you're interested with those great recommendations of this four-book set, right now we're trying to get a $120 membership for these four books. We have two sets of these four books to offer you. So those of you out there who haven't made a pledge yet and want to support us in a great way, please call right now 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266. One or two calls would really help us at this time.
Yeah, if you have family members who are in the military now or thinking about going in the military, get these books and let them read these books, and that'll definitely change their mind about the war.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And thank you, Kathleen and Marvin. The time is about a half minute after 11 here at KBOO in Portland, Oregon. Time for Democracy Now!
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or radiocab.net.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The top American military leader in Iraq says more U.S. troops may be headed to war. Speaking in Baghdad Tuesday, General George Casey said the U.S. has set a new target to hand security control to the Iraqi government for no sooner than the end of next year. General Casey said he believes Iraq will see significant progress by that time, but indicated that will require more U.S. troops. He also blamed Iran and Syria for the ongoing violence.
And both Iran and Syria continue to be decidedly unhelpful by providing support to the different extremists and terrorist groups operating inside Iraq. Now, if you add to all this the intensities of Ramadan and the fact that the new government is about 150 days old, it makes for a difficult situation, and it's likely to remain that way over the near term.
General Casey spoke alongside U.S. Ambassador Zalmay Khalilzad.
All right, straightforward. Despite the difficult challenges we face, success in Iraq is possible and can be achieved on a realistic timetable. Iraqi leaders must step up to achieve key political and security milestones on which they have agreed.
For several minutes, Casey and Khalilzad were forced to speak in the dark following a power outage in the U.S.-controlled Green Zone. As the Bush administration weighs sending more troops, the British military may be setting a timetable to withdraw its forces within a year. A U.S. defense official has told the Reuters news agency Britain's complaining its troops are, quote, near the breaking point in Iraq. A new poll released Tuesday shows withdrawal enjoys wide support among British citizens, with 60% in favor of a pullout this year. Meanwhile, more than 100 active-duty service members have now signed an appeal formally asking Congress to end the U.S. occupation of Iraq. The appeal was launched this week on the website appealforredress.org. It says, quote, "As a patriotic American proud to serve the nation in uniform, I respectfully urge my political leaders in Congress to support the prompt withdrawal of all American military forces and bases from Iraq. Staying in Iraq will not work and is not worth the price. It's time for U.S. troops to come home." In other Iraq news, an overnight U.S. airstrike has killed at least five people and injured six others in the Sadr City district of Baghdad. The U.S. says it launched the attacks after Iraqi troops came under fire. The Iraqi Interior Ministry says another 20 Iraqis were injured in the U.S. raid. Also Tuesday, the Pentagon announced the deaths of four U.S. troops. 91 service members have now lost their lives in Iraq this month. Meanwhile, the U.S. military is apologizing for what it calls the accidental killing of four Iraqi firefighters. The firefighters were responding to a call Monday when they were pulled over by U.S. troops. The Pentagon says the troops opened fire after mistaking the unarmed firefighters for insurgents. Venezuela is denying that it's giving up its bid to join the UN Security Council and asked Bolivia to run in its place. The denial came after Bolivian President Evo Morales made this announcement Tuesday.
Comandante Chavez told me that as they have not been able to attain a two-thirds majority for the Security Council, our friend Hugo Chavez said to gain consensus, he would give the candidacy to Bolivia.
The Venezuelan Foreign Ministry says it's raised the possibility of Bolivia's candidacy, but has not made a final decision. Guatemala currently leads Venezuela, but has not received the required two-thirds majority vote at the General Assembly. In other news from the UN, Cuba's renewing calls for an end to the U.S. embargo ahead of an upcoming vote at the General Assembly. This is Dagoberto Rodriguez Pereira, chief of the Cuban Interest Section in Washington.
El bloqueo de Estados Unidos.
The U.S. blockade has caused the Cuban people immense suffering and not only violates their fundamental human rights, but also the rights of Cubans who live in the U.S., the people of the United States, and citizens in third countries.
The U.N. General Assembly holds its annual vote on the embargo 2 weeks from today. In Afghanistan, a young girl was killed and two other children injured in a NATO bombing in the eastern Kunar province Tuesday. A NATO spokesperson says its forces were aiming at insurgents. In the occupied territories, a Spanish photographer with the Associated Press was freed Tuesday after less than a day in captivity. The photographer, Emilio Marinatti, had been kidnapped by masked assailants outside his apartment earlier in the day. In environmental news, the World Wildlife Fund is warning humans will be in need of two planets' worth of natural resources by the year 2050, unless consumption undergoes a radical change. The group says human reliance on the environment is now 25% greater than the planet can provide each year. Here in the United States, a new report from the monitor group electionline.org is warning 10 states are at risk of major voting problems in next month's midterm elections. The report says balloting could be complicated by a combination of uncertain voting machine technology and confusion over procedures. The report concludes, quote, "The November 7th election promises to bring more of what voters have come to expect since the 2000 elections, a divided body politic, an election system in flux, and the possibility, if not certainty, of problems at polls nationwide." Meanwhile, another report says these elections will mark the most expensive congressional race in U.S. history. According to the Center for Responsive Politics, candidates, parties, and advocacy groups will spend $2.6 billion on races across the country. Three-quarters of the total spending will come from business groups. In education news, the Bush administration has announced new rules that will allow school districts to create more single-sex classrooms and schools. The new rules alter existing regulations that bar sex discrimination in education programs or activities that receive federal funding. The American Civil Liberties Union and the National Organization for Women are both opposing the rule change. And finally, this news from Louisiana. New figures show a major racial disparity in the payment of insurance claims to victims of Hurricane Katrina. According to the Associated Press, white residents of New Orleans and surrounding parishes have been three times as likely as minority residents to request and receive help from agencies in disputes with insurance companies. Government figures show close to 75% of settled claims were filed by residents living in predominantly white neighborhoods. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report.